great, great Thursday. And stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show that's coming up next, right after the CBS News.
You set me free. She's brought him down.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Harley Carnes. It's a log on the fire under the hot seat for Idaho Senator Larry Craig. Minneapolis police released audio from their questioning that followed Craig's visit to the airport men's room, in which police claimed he tried to pick up an undercover cop for sex. He pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct, not a sex charge, and says now he wishes he had fought the original charges instead.
In the recording, this is the way Craig saw it.
You solicited me.
And he tried to claim he was set up.
You're out to enforce the law.
Right.
But you shouldn't be out to entrap people either.
This isn't entrapment.
The senator gave his version of events.
You said our feet bumped. I believe they did, because I reached down and scooted over. The next thing I knew, under the bathroom divider comes a card that says police.
But the cop didn't believe him.
There was a piece of paper on the floor. I picked it up. What about my hand?
Well, you're not being truthful with me. I'm kind of disappointed in you, Senator. I'm really disappointed right now.
Howard Ehrenstein, CBS News, Washington.
The Pentagon's asking the General Accounting Office to correct factual errors in its report to Congress on the situation in Iraq, which claims only 3 of the 18 benchmarks have been met by the Iraqi government. The White House doesn't like that report either.
The White House is doing all it can to downplay the GAO's dismal report.
It would be a mistake to limit one's view of what goes on in Iraq to the benchmarks.
Spokesman Tony Snow and other officials say the Congressional Watchdog Agency's assessment is unrealistic, because it tags pass or fail grades to the benchmarks without considering what the White House views as progress. The administration will issue its own report in about 2 weeks, a report that will contend the troop surge is working. Peter Mayer, CBS News, The White House.
Former Senator Republican Fred Thompson of Tennessee will announce his candidacy for president next week. I'mwithfred.com says the official announcement will appear first in its webcast. The hindsight report by the state of Virginia on the massacre at Virginia Tech says quicker identification or quicker notification about the first shootings at the dormitory might have made a big difference. Reaction from Tech President Charles Steger.
I respect the opinion of the panel, but we did what we felt was in the best interest of our students at that point in time. And the panel itself said that, you know, had you done it earlier, it may have affected it. They didn't say it would have. They said it may have.
The report also says the gunman had had anger problems before, and the university could have been all over that and may have gotten him more help and saved some lives. There's a proposal to change a couple of the rules at the Arkansas State Capitol building. There is a rule that says a lawmaker may not have so much as a cup of water at their desk, but the spittoon, that's okay. It's a holdover from the days when chewing tobacco or spitting snuff was a lot more common than it is today. On Wall Street, the Dow lost more than 50 points to close at 13,238. The Nasdaq gained 2 today. Oil, $73.36 a barrel, down 15 cents. This is CBS News.
I'm Jeff Gordon, and if you want to win your race against smoking, go to Nicorette.com. There you'll find out about the winning taste of Nicorette Fresh Mint and Fruit Chew Gum. Plus, you can enter for a chance to win a trip to the Nicorette 300 and a 2008 Chevy Tahoe. Nicorette Stop Smoking Gum helps relieve your cravings and has the flavor that will keep you in the race.
Use as directed. Individual results may vary. Support program improves chances of success. No purchase necessary. For rules and entry details, go to Nicorette.com. Sweepstakes ends October 1st, 2007.
You've got to check this out. The amazing Labor Day Serta mattress event is going on this Thursday through Monday at Sam's Club. Experience super Serta savings on all mattresses all weekend long, and only at Sam's Club. See details in Thursday's newspaper or go to samsclub.com. You'll save money and sleep easier.
Try a Serta mattress with a comfort test demonstration at Sam's Club, Saturday through Monday only.
There's a suspect in the extortion bomb plot against Walmart and other big box stores. CBS's Dan Revive with the latest on the investigation.
A law enforcement source this morning said the suspect is in Portugal. Money was traced after at least one Walmart transferred apparently thousands of dollars to a foreign account reacting to phone calls to stores and to some banks threatening to bomb them.
There's a lot of similarities, so it makes us think that there's either one person or just a small group involved in this.
Said FBI agent Rich Kolko, those extortion calls Sunday through Wednesday to 12 states from Oregon to Virginia, Kansas, and Maine. Some callers may be copycat pranksters. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
Like a mini CSI, Mitchell, South Dakota story. Police say they found purple latex gloves miles away from the robberies of a convenience store and a casino, as described by victims. They like it because while the gloves may keep the crooks from leaving fingerprints at the scene, they leave some pretty good ones inside the gloves. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
I'm thinking of a number between 450 and 850. Know what it is? It's my credit score, and it happens to be 720. Do you know your credit score? Do you know what's in your credit report? You can find out right now at freecreditreport.com. How much easier could it get? Log on to freecreditreport.com. It's fast, free, and easy. That's freecreditreport.com. Offer applies with enrollment and triple advantage.
You've got to check this out. The amazing Labor Day Serta mattress event is going on this Thursday through Monday at Sam's Club. Experience super Serta savings on all mattresses all weekend long and only at Sam's Club. See details in Thursday's newspaper or go to samsclub.com. You'll save money and sleep easier.
Try a Serta mattress with a comfort test demonstration at Sam's Club, Saturday through Monday only.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
This is how we do it.
Yeah, observe carefully, because this is how we do it. Another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. It's sizzling hot on the left coast today. I hope you found a spot in the shade and have something cool to sip on.
This is how we do it. It's Friday night.
Well, it's not quite Friday night, but Montel Jordan, every night's Friday for him, right? We've got a great program lined up for you today and only 3 hours to present it all. Coming up in about a half an hour, Harvey Wasserman returns to our program. He is a Renaissance man who is an expert on wind and solar power. He is an opponent of nuclear power. We're going to talk about some developments, efforts to revive the nuclear power industry in the United States, and Senator Domenici of New Mexico has slipped in some items to a recent energy bill, which you will find shocking and surprising. Subsidies and some liability exceptions or exemptions for new nuclear power plant construction here in the United States. Also, there is a little-known issue, a problem at the Vermont Yankee nuclear power facility in the Green Mountain State, and Harvey will update us on that. And this week there was a preposterous editorial in the Chicago Tribune saying that the recent leak and accident at a nuclear facility in Japan proves that everything's hunky-dory with nuclear power. So we're going to take that up with Harvey Wasserman later on this hour. And in the next hour, Scott Dick joins us, as usual, to talk military and veterans issues. I don't know if we'll be able to get to it all, but he has a report for us that plans for the MRAP, which is a hardened vehicle, have been scaled back for our troops in Iraq. There's a new $50 billion supplemental request for the occupation of Iraq, and Bob Gates, the Secretary of Defense, didn't know about it. Also, we're going to talk about the plans for the big Petraeus Dog and Pony Show on Capitol Hill in just a couple of weeks. And in Iraq, Muqtada al-Sadr has issued a stand-down order to his forces, telling them no more attacks on Americans or other Iraqis for 6 months. So that we will talk about with Scott. In our third hour today, we're going to meet Professor Jack Miles from the University of California at Irvine. He wrote a powerful piece, an op-ed, in Wednesday's New York Times describing that the UN authorization for the U.S. occupation of Iraq is going to expire in December of this year. And the Iraqi parliament has already taken the position that it should not be renewed without their advice and consent. And they're also on record asking U.S. forces to leave. So this is a very interesting, just another element of the debate over Iraq and some of the issues driving it. And in our final segment on the program today, Brent Badowski returns, a former Capitol Hill staffer, and he was lied about by a Fox News reporter, and he is shooting back. You'll hear the details, and I promise you won't get caught in the crossfire. That's all coming up before the end of the program today. You're invited to call in whenever you want to join the conversation. That makes it a two-way dialogue kind of talk show. And our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. You dial 3-8 and then 573-8132. And, yeah, put a 1 in front of the whole string, and it'll work better. And I'm still waiting for our new listeners in Big Sky Country, listening to Big Sky Radio in Laurel, Billings, Montana on 1490 AM. If you check in this hour, I have a nice little prize to send along to you. And I just want to make sure that the signal's being heard there in Big Sky Country and that you are checking us out. I understand we're the new kids on your radio block. And you're probably saying, what's this guy up to? What's his angle? What's his bias? Well, feel free to call and agree or disagree with things that you hear me talk about. Again, my toll-free number, 1-888-5-PETER-B. Well, ordinarily, we kick off the show this day with Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress. They are on a break, and he's not able to join us today. So I'm going to run down some of the stories at thinkprogress.org and also talk about some items in the news today. And you're welcome to join in, give us a call, and talk about some of the things I mentioned. First of all, because of the long holiday weekend, I want people to know that Fridays and Mondays programs of the Peter B. Collins Show will be pre-recorded so that I and the team here can enjoy a little time off and celebrate what's left of organized labor in this country. I want to begin the show with a moment of memory. Richard Jewell died yesterday at the age of 44. And Richard Jewell was the butt of a lot of jokes. He was a suspect in the Atlanta Olympics bombing back in 1996. And he was slimed by the media and by the government as they falsely framed him as a suspect in this grisly bombing right there at the Olympic Park. And he never really recovered. Either his reputation or his health. He learned he had diabetes this past February, and we believe that was the cause of his death. His wife found him dead when she came home from work the other day. So I only want to mention this because our media is so quick to convict people, and we have seen that in so many cases, most recently the Duke lacrosse players, who were convicted on primetime television, and Nancy Grace has still not apologized or, to my knowledge, given any honest indication of her role in that and just how mistaken she was. And Richard Jewell will never get his reputation back. And I don't know the guy, he seemed like a sap to me. But I think it's important to note this because he's dead now. He'll be a footnote in the history books, and his reputation will never really be cleared. Lots to talk about here, too. The Larry Craig case continues to give us fodder. According to thinkprogress.org, the New York Post published a little cutesy piece today, complete with a pink color backdrop. And it says, "Are you a gay senator?" Now, it's kind of funny, but it's also kind of homophobic. It says, "Are you a closeted GOP senator? Take this simple test to find out. You answer yes or no. Do you sing show tunes in the car between political events? Do you immediately issue a statement denying involvement whenever there's a gay sex scandal, even if your name hasn't come up? Do you quit the singing senator's barbershop quartet because the bow ties didn't match the seersucker suits? Did your college fraternity brothers nickname you Mother? Did you chastise Bill Clinton during the Monica Lewinsky scandal for being a very naughty boy? Do you take a wide stance in public bathrooms? Now, to be fair, all of these questions relate to Larry Craig and some of the preposterous comments he's made in the past or since he was exposed as he pled guilty to disorderly conduct based on that police sting in the bathroom at the Minneapolis airport. And many Republican officials have called for his resignation, including John McCain. And Hoekstra is a congressman from Michigan. Mark Souter, a Republican from Indiana in the House, says he believes that Craig needs to step down. And let's see, a few other Republicans, Ginny Brown Wade of Florida, Bobby Jindal, Louisiana, Ron Lewis, Kentucky, Jeff Miller of Florida, all urge Craig to step down. So, and he has been stripped of his committee leadership positions, but he still sits on those various committees with no rank. So it's going to be very interesting. Frankly, it's very clear to me that Larry Craig will resign. It's just a matter of when. And turning to the Petraeus Report, the Think Progress blog today is telling us that General Petraeus is insisting that he's going to write his own report. It's not being written by the White House for him. But it's really not clear at this point. And on the Think Progress blog here, a conservative congresswoman, a Democrat from California here in the East Bay, Ellen Tauscher, said that she is adding her name to the list of analysts and lawmakers concerned about David Petraeus and his conflicting loyalty between the desire to please the president and to report the unvarnished truth about the failure of Bush's strategy. And Tauscher told Think Progress, "We have to be sanguine about the surge. And it's Petraeus's idea. He's a fabulous military officer, tremendous pedigree, but I don't know anybody that doesn't want to sell their idea and keep selling it. I don't know anybody that doesn't think that people that aren't for his idea are critical. So I think he's been put in a terrible position by the commander-in-chief." And Tauscher added a footnote that on a recent trip to Iraq, she was sleeping in a compound in the Green Zone, and a mortar fell very close to that compound. She said the constant stress the troops are under is something we need to factor in. She said it's not just going to the front line, it's going to the chow line that is a place of danger in Iraq. So those are a couple of items that are up at thinkprogress.org. I've got a few more that I'll pass along to you. We're going to take a break right now, and if you want to call in with a comment, feel free to join me. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. Hey, Montana, where are you? I want to hear from you. 888-573-8372. It's 17 minutes past the hour. I'm your humble host right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 22 minutes after the hour. We're taking a look at some of the news developments today, and I mentioned that thinkprogress.org is offering an item from General Petraeus. Yeah, I'm going to write my own report. And one of the things I believe the Democrats need to do is not permit him to testify on September 11th. They control the agenda on Capitol Hill, and they have to flatly say it is inappropriate to exploit the losses that our country took on September 11th of 2001 with this war that has nothing to do with 9/11 and this occupation that has even less to do with 9/11. And I hope the Democrats will stand firm on that. Now, we just see this coming in from Ross Story today. The Defense Department is bristling because the General Accountability Office of the Congress has reported that they have missed 13 of the 18 benchmarks set by Congress to evaluate the government's, the Iraqi government's performance. That's about 28%, or we would call that an F in most academic situations. Now, according to the Associated Press, Pentagon Press Secretary Jeff Morrell said that he is, after reviewing a draft of the Government Accountability Office report, policy officials made some factual corrections, offered some suggestions on a few of the actual grades assigned by the GAO. In other words, they want him to take the test over. Anything they can do to try to fudge, spin, and mislead the American people. Now, here's a new attack from Fox News Channel. They are attacking Katie Couric, who is not my favorite news anchor, because CBS is sending her to Iraq. And the screen reads, "Single mother anchor to the war zone. Is this the right move?" And Neil Cavuto was hosting, and he brought on somebody named Kraus. I'm reading this, a single mother. This person, Kraus, I see Janice Kraus of Concerned Women for America, pointedly accused Couric of being a bad mother for going to cover Iraq. I'd say the same thing if this were a man journalist going out there, a male anchor, because when you look at the choice she's making, she's saying my ratings are more important than my children. That's the bottom line. Get a life, Fox News. It's just so ridiculous. Jake's on the line from Arcata. Hello, Jake.
Hey, Peter B., how's it going?
Doing okay.
Well, you know what I say about Fox News? Fox News is for idiots. And unfortunately, you know, I'm not going to say Katie Couric is much above the idiot level, but she's definitely an improvement over anything on the Fox network.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Obviously,
I'd rather see, you know, someone like Dan Rather, you know, anchoring the CBS Evening News, somebody with some, you know, legitimate journalistic credibility.
Well, how about Amy Goodman? If CBS wanted to put a woman anchor on in the worst way, I think the woman who has the greatest credibility in American media right now, who asks the toughest questions, her name's Amy Goodman.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, you know, there could always be a, you know, Peter B. Collins news broadcast. You know, that's a possibility. You know?
Well, I'm not interested in television news because it's driven by the pictures and by market research, and I would quit after about 3 days.
Well, I know what you're saying. It's hard to watch the TV news these days without, you know, wanting to laugh at the television screen.
But
Craig's face on the TV screen.
If I worked for ABC, though, maybe they would assign me Sam Donaldson's rug.
What was up with ABC and these guys with horrible toupees? Ted Koppel, Sam Donaldson, George Will.
Wait a minute. You think Koppel's is a rug?
Oh, it's got to be. That can't be real hair.
Oh, I think that's real.
That's real?
I think it is, yeah.
I'm shocked. I didn't think that was real here. Well, anyways, okay. Well, the reason I did call was to discuss the whole issue of Republican hypocrisy. It's been obviously big in the news this week with Larry Craig. I just find it amazing to watch the Republicans basically eat themselves alive over this issue. You know, in the Democratic Party, being gay is not a political death sentence for a politician. You can be gay like Barney Frank, and most Democrats are fine with that, okay? But Larry Craig had this stupid press conference where he made a big deal about claiming not to be gay because it wasn't the fact that he was trying to pick up on somebody in an airport restroom. It was his orientation that was a problem for Republican voters, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time Republicans grow up so that their politicians can come out of the closet and be honest about who they are.
Well, you know,
they're having to play these games.
Predatory heterosexuals who don't honor their marriage vows or other commitments to a spouse or partner, that's something that most Republicans appear to be able to overlook. But as soon as there's a hint of homosexuality, it's get me away from that. And I think it's kind of interesting to see them confront this from one of their own, one of the real staunch Neanderthal, Bible thumping, gay hating, fag bashing Republicans from, you know, the heartland. So it's definitely a major setback for the evangelicals. I think that in some ways it's going to cause religious conservatives to either not vote next year or at least cut back on their volunteer work and cash contributions to the Republican Party. So, you know, this is a scandal that progressives and Democrats can't really complain about. But we do have to look at the more serious issues and demand that Democrats pay attention to them. And that's going to be our challenge with the Gonzalez replacement in the next few weeks. Jake, thanks for checking in today. Always good to hear from you. Coming up next, Harvey Wasserman joins me. Nukes are back. Bigger, better, safer than ever. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Live from the Left Coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
The Peter B. Collins Show is a nuclear-free zone. Is it time to build more nuclear power plants in the United States of America?
Imagine the time when it all began. In the dying days of a war, a weapon that could settle the score. Whoever found it first would be sure to do their worst. We always had the nation.
Our music of the moment is by the Canadian hard rock band called Rush, and that's a song called Manhattan Project. Takes us back to the history of the development of nuclear weapons in this country. We're not going to talk about the weapons this half hour, but about nuclear power plants. And Harvey Wasserman's a guy who's been opposed to them since Diablo Canyon, going back to the 1970s, where he was a protester in San Luis Obispo. His brand new book is called Solartopia, Our Green-Powered Earth AD 2030. And it's a vision thing. It's a vision statement about how to move forward away from oil and nuclear power. And Harvey is also the Renaissance man who has helped us understand how the 2004 election, the presidential election, was stolen right there in Ohio, where he joins us from Columbus today. Hello, Harvey.
Hey, great to be with you, Peter B.
My pleasure, sir. And there's a lot going on in this nuclear power arena these days. You dropped me an email a couple of days ago about a recent incident that I have seen nothing about in the corporate media, and it occurred at the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant in the Green Mountain State, which is where my grandfather came from. So tell us a little bit about what's been going on at Vermont Yankee.
Well, this won't be hard to make up. In fact, when I read the item about it on the Internet, I had to read it twice. I thought maybe it came from The Onion or some parody magazine, but the fact of the matter is that a cooling tower at the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant collapsed, just fell down. Now, the rig at the Vermont Yankee is they had 22, now it's, of course, 21, cooling towers, 50 feet high, 40 feet wide, 300 feet long, the two rows, and they were made of wood and steel and other materials, and not long ago, the Vermont Yankee plant was upgraded to generate more power than it was originally designed to do, and so they put big, heavy fans on top of these older cooling towers, and wouldn't you know, one of them just fell down. It spewed some 350,000 gallons of water per minute into the earth, and there you have it. So now instead of 22 cooling towers, Vermont Yankee has 21. They actually shut half the plant try and figure out how to deal with this one row of cooling towers. They really should have shut the whole thing.
Now, Harvey,
the whole thing should be shut and buried. Should have been buried a long time ago.
Harvey,
but this is another example of nuclear power.
Pardon me. Did I hear you correctly that this cooling tower array was constructed in part with wood?
Yes, that's right.
Now,
Douglas firs, apparently.
Huh?
Douglas firs. FIRS.
Now, why would you build a cooling tower out of wood?
You got me. Why would you build a cooling tower at all?
Well,
why would you build a nuclear plant at all? These things are incredibly expensive, unreliable.
All right, I get to ask. Wait a minute. I get to ask the rhetorical questions here.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you have to ask the designers about that one. I was scratching my head about that too. That's part of the reason why I thought it might have been a parody.
I mean, even chicken wire would be a stronger.
Well, I'm sure there's some chicken wire in there, Peter. And, you know, there may be even some chickens in there. We don't know, but
uh-huh.
this is the Keystone Cops at work building your nuclear plants.
So, who owns Vermont Yankee?
A company called Entergy, based in the South, They are a nuke operator. They run many different nuclear plants, and this is one of them.
And we basically
they give a lot
have
of money to candidates like Hillary Clinton.
We have two energy companies now that have bought up most of the nuclear power plants in the country. Is that right?
Yes, Entergy, and I forget the name of the other one offhand.
Yeah, they own the one in Illinois, and they've been
They're the shell, the old shell of Con Ed, Commonwealth Edison,
right?
Which had a dozen reactors, but you know, the whole industry has really been essentially turned into a McNugget, in that you know they're operated like chains. They are very sloppy. The bottom line is all that counts in terms of profit. There's pretty much no regulation that's reliable. I mean, how is it that you can have a nuclear plant operating and one of the cooling towers collapses and you still allow the plant to operate? I mean, you know, they said, okay, well, we're going to cut 50% now. I mean, come on, there's 22 cooling towers there. Any one of them could go down again. And yet we're asked to, say that the nuclear industry is safe enough to build more nuclear plants.
Mm-hmm.
So, Peter, let me inform you of what's really happening here, big time, which is that the nuclear industry has gone into the U.S. Senate, and as part of the energy bill, which is in front of Congress when they come back from Labor Day, there will be consideration of a sentence in the Senate version of the energy bill, which will allow for essentially unlimited government guarantees of money to build new nuclear plants. And they're talking essentially about $25 billion for 2008 and $25 billion more for 2009 with no real congressional ability to limit the amount of money that's going to go into this.
We're preparing to shovel out federal money. And how is this going to work, Harvey? Are these subsidies to companies that want to build new nuke power plants?
There are guarantees on the loans of up to 80% of the cost of construction.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a company wants to build a nuclear plant, they can get their loans up to 80% guaranteed by us, you and me, so that if something happens and the company goes belly up financially, for the nuclear plant, a nuclear investment there, we pick up the bill. So, because they can't get Wall Street to invest in nuclear
mm-hmm.
power.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 50-year proven failure.
Now,
we've had 50 years of experience with atomic energy.
Now, this begs the next question, which is, I'm not familiar with a nuclear power plant built after 1970 that came in anywhere near on budget.
No.
So with these huge cost overruns that typically occur with a nuclear power plant construction project, is our government writing these loan guarantees for just whatever it costs?
Yes.
Isn't that beautiful?
It's basically a blank check.
Wow.
And, you know, we've already got the industry, you've got, you know, media out there talking about the wonderful miracle of new generation of nuclear plants. There are none. You know, this is all on paper. This is all theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, they are building a new nuke in Finland, and they're already behind schedule and over budget.
Yeah.
To the extent that Areva, the French plant, the French company that's been building this thing, has gotten into serious delays in their negotiation with the Chinese, because the Chinese allegedly were going to buy more of these. Now, thankfully, this deal may be going south, but
mm-hmm.
the fact of the matter is that we have no new nuclear plants. There's again, you know, blowing smoke here and selling air.
Yeah.
And selling bad air, as a matter of fact.
Well, they're also using greenwashing techniques. We had a gentleman on a couple of months ago who surfaced out of nowhere, wants to build a nuclear power plant near Fresno, California. And he's a real smooth-talking SOB. I'll give him credit for that.
I'll bet he is.
But he is out there raising private capital, working on political connections, both at the local level to get this boondoggle approved, and I think at the federal level for the kind of largesse that you just described. And one of the selling points that these people offer is, oh, we need to reduce our greenhouse gases. We need to get out of coal-fired power plants, and the obvious solution is safe, clean nuclear energy.
Yeah, well, first of all, let's talk about that a minute. And by the way, Peter, I do want to focus your listeners on these subsidies before we lose track.
We'll come back.
Loan guarantees in the energy bill. It is absolutely essential that these guarantees be removed from the energy bill, and that's going to mean calling senators and congresspeople. It's in the it's going to go into conference. We will find out who is on the conference committee from the House and the Senate, and really have to level as much pressure as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm. I'll be happy to collude and conspire with you on that.
Yes,
Harvey.
Absolutely. Now, this whole nonsense, and I appreciate it, and you've got great reach, so it's going to help. But you know, there are times when you fight these things when there are very specific focuses that come up of deeds that need done, and this is one of those times. It will make a huge difference to the future of this planet if within the next 2 or 3 months we can get these loan guarantees defeated. This is one of the moments where abstract discussions are great, but tangible action has a real focal point, and that's what we're talking about right here is in the energy bill. So you and I hopefully will keep your listeners posted, and I'll let you know what's happening.
Yeah, call me anytime, okay?
I will indeed. So now, in terms of global warming, nuclear power makes global warming worse. It emits huge quantities of heat into rivers and into the atmosphere to the extent now that both in France and in Alabama we have had nuclear plants shut because the rivers that were used to cool these nuclear plants are too hot.
Mm-hmm.
We have now rivers at 90 degrees. You know, when a swimming pool is at 90 degrees, they shut it down.
Right.
But these rivers are now at 90 degrees, and because the plants that are dumping all this waste heat has superheated them. And so the rivers can't be used for cooling, and they can't be sustained ecologically, and so the nuclear plants have to shut.
Well, then why don't we just open up the Ready Kilowatt Hot Springs Resort?
Well, then you can not only get relaxed in the hot water, but you can glow in the dark.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's
going. And you'll remember this for a half-life of 250 million years.
Yes, indeed. And so, you know, this nonsense, they've got this guy Patrick Moore running around who allegedly helped found Greenpeace, which he didn't. And they've got Stuart Brand, who runs a consulting company, and, you know, a few other people who are allegedly green people who are saying that nuclear power is a green technology. It's absolutely Orwellian doublethink, you know, dishonest and inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
And, the idea that nuclear power could help save the environment, it's like saying put a gun to your head is going to improve the quality of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply and utterly 100% wrong.
If I could arrange it, would you debate Stuart Brand?
Sure, anytime.
I don't think
Patrick Moore will talk to me.
Yeah, I've got some mutual friends who know Stuart Brand, so I'll try.
That'd be wonderful. I'd love to do it. And, you know, I'm sure he's an engaging and interesting gentleman, but he's wrong on this issue, and so is James Lovelock and Jared Diamond. Now, they have managed to get a couple people, but you'll notice that the ranks of the so-called environmentalists who are supporting nuclear power are very thin. There are not very many people with so-called environmental credentials out there saying that nuclear power is going to be good for the environment. You know, there's a couple groups and a handful of people, but by and large, the environmental movement is very, very united in its opposition to more nuclear plants, not only for environmental grounds, but also for economic grounds. These plants can't pay for themselves, and they will be a huge drain on our economy, as they have been for the past 50 years.
Well, and you didn't mention, and I just have to, that we have not solved the issues related to nuclear waste. And it is just preposterous to imagine that we can produce more spent fuel and other nuclear byproducts and, just store them at the site. And number one, there's no risk of terrorist attacks. And number two, in our lifetime, you'll never have to worry.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that a minute.
Well, then, let me take a break so we don't get off schedule here. We'll come back and talk about that and a few other things, including an incredibly bizarre editorial from the Chicago Tribune this week.
Yeah, really.
More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you want to talk with Harvey Wasserman, call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you.
we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour. A little technical note for our listeners at KRXA 540 in Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz. Our program is on the air, and it is uninterrupted by commercials. Don't worry about it. There's a computer that blew up, and Hal's working really hard to fix it. We continue our conversation with Harvey Wasserman. His powerful new book, which offers a tremendous vision about a green future in America, is called Solartopia. And there's a website at solartopia.org where you can get full information. I got the T-shirt, too. Thank you, Harvey.
My pleasure.
And you can also go to harveywasserman.com, and let's not give up on freepress.net.
That's where all the election theft reporting has been done.
Freepress.org. Now, Harvey, before the break, I had to cut you off as you were about to address the nuclear waste issue.
Yes, well, we have the plan, which is 50 years old. You know, this is the 50th anniversary of the first commercial reactor going online at Shippingport, Pennsylvania. And it went online more or less on schedule, actually, under the supervision of Hyman Rickover of the Nuclear Navy. And at that time, they said that they would have a solution just around the corner for what to do with high-level nuclear waste. The corner has turned into kind of a freeway going all the way across the country. 50 years later, we have no national repository for high-level nuclear waste. They have designated a dormant volcano in the Nevada desert called Yucca Mountain, into which they have now poured $10 billion worth of construction. And you know what they've got, I've been actually in and through Yucca Mountain. It's a railway. It goes into the mountain, and they're digging these tunnels. They are estimating that by the time they're done in 2017, 10 years from now, it will cost $60 billion. Most people believe it'll never be finished, and that they'll wind up spending about $100 billion. This is not counted among the subsidies that the federal government is putting out.
Mm-hmm.
And many people believe that Yucca Mountain is absolutely doomed. It'll never work. I've been there. I've seen the earthquake fault that goes through Yucca Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
It is substantial, and it is visible. There is also what's called perched water, which is kind of like a trapped underground pond at the peak of Yucca Mountain that critics fear that if radioactive waste is put into the aquifer there, into the tunnel, mm-hmm. that and an earthquake occurs, that the material could fall down and fall onto the radioactive waste and cause a steam explosion.
And how far is Yucca Mountain from Las Vegas, Harvey?
Yucca Mountain is 80 miles from Las Vegas.
Oh, that's really safe, isn't it?
Yeah. The people in Las Vegas are really thrilled about it.
I got a caller here, Dave, in the Pinnacles, with a very interesting question about solar-powered perpetual motion. Go ahead, Dave. Dave, are you there?
Oh. Yes, I'm here.
Well, no, Harvey's there, but I lost Dave.
Oh.
Anyway, it's up on the screen. Dave says, why can't we get a whole bunch of solar panels that run water pumps that pump water from a lower lake to an upper lake, and then when we want electricity, we pump it down or let it go gravity-fed down through turbines? Would that ever work?
Yes, absolutely. We have we have power plants that do that now. It's called pump storage. And the key, of course, would be to do it with solar power or
mm-hmm.
wind power.
Mm-hmm.
Wind power is actually maybe more practical. Wind machines are very, very powerful. The wind business is booming. It's exploding. It's becoming a multi-billion dollar industry worldwide. And, there's no reason why we couldn't do that with wind power.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough wind potential with currently available technology to generate 100% of the electricity that the United States uses in Kansas, North Dakota, and Texas alone. And that's really just West Texas. There's not much wind
mm-hmm.
in East Texas. California, which led the world, actually at one point California had 95% of the world's wind-produced electricity. Under Jerry Brown in the 70s and 80s, and to the 80s, that has been exceeded now, California, by Germany and Spain, and actually Texas is creeping up. We still have a lot of windmills in California, and they work mm-hmm. well, although the ones at Altamont need to be replaced, and that's another conversation.
All right, Dave's back from the Pinnacles. Dave, do we answer your question?
Hi. Well, I'm sorry, but I didn't have my radio on.
All right.
It's,
well,
it's unfortunate we have to spend so much time addressing the issue of things that don't work and that will harm us.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I'm a little tight.
That's really a sad reflection on the attitude.
Dave, I'm a little tight for time, so I'm just going to tell you that your theory will work. And Harvey just said that with wind power, there are some places where they actually use this kind of a pump the water up and fill it down.
Water. About using two reservoirs.
No, I understand. I understand. Dave, we did explain your idea,
and he
says it will work. So, Harvey,
it's
I want to turn briefly to this stunning editorial that was published by the Chicago Tribune this week, dated August 26th, and they basically tell the story of the recent accident in Japan at that huge nuclear power facility at Kashiwazaki Kariwa. And it was an 6.8 magnitude earthquake, and this plant had leaks. They lied to us about the extent of the damage, and this has spun entirely on its head, and the Tribune says it has restored their faith in the safety of nuclear power.
You know, again, you know, sometimes you think you're reading The Onion or you're listening to The Daily Show when this kind of stuff comes on. I mean, aside from all that, the Chicago Tribune made a huge error in this, which is a common error. They said that nuclear power provides us with 20% of our energy. And in fact, it's our 20% of our electricity. It's about 8% of our energy.
Good point.
We could certainly do without nuclear power almost overnight, because we have plenty of excess capacity in the system, and we need to make this transition to renewables, to a green-powered Earth. And the bottom line is that the Tribune has told us that they're happy that the reactors came through this earthquake in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. There was radiation escape.
Yeah.
The owners of the nuclear plant lied to the public.
Harvey, I got to stop there, and I want to direct people to solartopia.org and pick up the book Solartopia by Harvey Wasserman. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show.
Pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. Sober Stones. Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com. SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. Sober Stones.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Paints and stains, 10% on select wall coverings, too. Hurry, sale ends Monday, September 3rd, for painting and decorating. For locations, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply.
It's your walls and your ideas, your kitchen and your creativity, your garage and your vision. It's your home, from the small jobs that renew to more ambitious ideas that transform. At Ace Hardware, we're here to help you.
Come to your neighborhood Ace and start your project now for paint, plumbing, home organization, serious hardware, and great gadgets. Plus, a team of Ace folks to help you get just what you need to make your home beautiful.
Ace is your place with everything for your home, plus expert advice and solutions that work for you. Ace, the helpful place.
If only, words that resound in a report on April's mass killings at Virginia Tech.
Lives might have been saved if Virginia Tech administrators issued earlier warnings about a campus gunman.
The broad Tech and Blacksburg community should have been notified of the fact that there was a fatal shooting and the fact that a perpetrator or perpetrators were still at large and had not been apprehended.
Virginia Governor Tim Kaine accepting what he called a comprehensive and thorough, hard-hitting but fair report on the April 16th massacre. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Richmond, Virginia.
University President Charles Steger.
Nobody can say for certain what would have happened if different decisions were made. However, to say that something could have been prevented is certainly not to say that it would have been.
It's leaked. The government's General Accounting Office progress report on Iraq. White House reaction?
I'm Mark Noller at the White House, which doesn't dispute GAO's findings that many benchmarks set for Iraq haven't been met. But spokesman Tony Snow says that doesn't tell the whole story about the situation. He says the real question is whether the surge in U.S. troops there is having an impact. He says there's no question it is. And he urges Congress to wait for testimony on that next month from General Petraeus.
She gets to take it off. Former astronaut Lisa Nowak's electronic ball and chain.
Last Friday, Nowak's intended victim, Colleen Shipman, asked the judge to keep it on.
Are you still afraid of Ms. Nowak?
Yes.
Do you want her taken off the ankle monitor?
Absolutely not.
Judge Mark Lubitz says Nowak can take it off, partly based on Shipman's testimony that she visited her boyfriend several times in Houston, where Nowak also lives and moves about freely. The judge also says Nowak has no prior criminal history and no violations since her release on bond. Nowak is still not allowed to go to Brevard County, Florida, where Shipman lives. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Statin update from CBS's Barry Bagnato.
If you've had a stroke, take your cholesterol-reducing statins. That message is underlined in a study in the journal Stroke. Italian researchers noticed when patients stopped taking statins within a year of their strokes, their risk of death increased twofold. In this study, 4 of 10 patients stopped their statins. Other studies show the figure is similar in the United States.
How would you like to know more about your doctor? Federal judge's ruling provides for finding out plenty.
This ruling would, in essence, open up the Medicare database for information about the kinds of operations a doctor does and how often.
For many types of procedures, although not all, there's a relationship between the number of procedures a physician has done and likely outcome.
Robert Krughoff is president of Consumers Checkbook, the group that brought the suit, and is waiting to see if the Bush administration will appeal. Doctors worry the information might give some misleading impressions and reveal private information, like how much they earn. Steve Kaif and CBS News.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
I'm Jeff Gordon, and if you want to win your race against smoking, go to Nicorette.com. There you'll find out about the winning taste of Nicorette Fresh Mint and Fruit Chew Gum. Plus, you can enter for a chance to win a trip to the Nicorette 300 and a 2008 Chevy Tahoe. Nicorette Stop Smoking Gum helps relieve your cravings and has the flavor that'll keep you in the race.
Use as directed. Individual results may vary. Support program improves chances of success. No purchase necessary. For rules and entry details, go to Nicorette.com. Sweepstakes ends October 1st, 2007.
You've got to check this out. The amazing Labor Day Serta mattress event is going on this Thursday through Monday at Sam's Club. Experience super Serta savings on all mattresses all weekend long and only at Sam's Club. See details in Thursday's newspaper or go to samsclub.com. You'll save money and sleep easier.
Try a Serta mattress with a comfort test demonstration at Sam's Club, Saturday through Monday only.
Extortion, nasty business, especially when it takes on international...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We got got to work on that pesky mission and get it accomplished. Let the facts catch up with our PR, don't you think? Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. And it's time for our weekly visit with Scott Dick. He served in the Marine Corps, retired from the U.S. Army at the rank of major, and he knows much more than I do about how the Pentagon operates, how military minds think, and helps us understand some of the things that are going on between, in particular, the military and political figures, both here and in Iraq. Scott, good to talk to you today.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for joining us. Before we dip into General Petraeus, the surge, the report that's coming up in September, and a bunch of other issues, I just wanted to give you a chance because you were one of the first people to call me the other day when we learned the news of the resignation of Attorney General Gonzalez. And you said you just had to call somebody.
I had to call somebody I could celebrate with, Peter, because most people, I just don't know if they're aware of, you know, as an ex-soldier twice. He's the guy who described the Geneva Conventions as quaint.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sickness that he should have been immediately smacked by somebody of his same pay grade. But he wasn't. He was rewarded, in fact.
Yeah, promoted.
Yeah, it's sick when somebody can say that the Geneva Conventions are quaint. That's obviously a guy who's never served in uniform and never really, you know, did anything that made him scared.
He did serve. Gonzalez is one of the few in the Bush administration who actually served in the military. I believe he was in the Air Force. I don't know that he ever saw combat. I think he is young enough that he would have joined after Vietnam.
Okay, the Air Force. That's another tough one. They live in, don't ever forget, they live in dorms. People, don't send me emails, okay? Just send them to Peter. It's not the brown boot military. It's the green suit military. And they do their jobs great. I mean, you know, what we do without Air Force pilots and the space program and all that stuff, the Predator.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
It's not the same thing, Peter. I hate to tell you that.
Yeah. All right. And you have anything to say about Senator Larry Craig and the wide stance that he utilizes when he's in the stall there?
No, but see, this is the thing that Republicans don't get, or family values. And I put quotation remarks around it because they're not. They're it should be family bigoted. They're bigoted towards only one definition of what they conceive to be a family. And even inside the Republican Party, those families aren't, given that, you know, Giuliani is, what, 24 years older and Fred Thompson is 29 years older. He's saying he has a six-month-old baby, too, by the way. I mean, this is Kucinich struck me as weird because he's got a 29-year-old wife. It's just family values is an issue inside the Republican Party. Now, the statistics are 10 to 12% of the population is gay.
All right, but hold on a minute, Scott. It sounds like you're a little jealous of these dweebs who get trophy wives. I mean, Dennis Kucinich was unmarried when he ran in 2004, and now he's got a hot babe on his arm there.
They're not even the same height category, let alone the same generation. I mean, really. And, you know, I'm not one of these guys that's big into the family values as a marker, but in the Republicans' case, if 10 to 12% of the population is homosexual, that means I served with homosexuals every day on active duty. They're professionals. They know what they're doing. They're smart. I say they because in Congress, what's the population there? 400 and something? That means 40 to 50. We only have three openly homosexual members of Congress. I mean, give me a break, Larry, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, okay, I'm gay. Susan was a cover wife, and where do I stand now? And get on with it, and nobody would care. But this whole thing, press conference with, I am not gay, I mean, it's just so remarkably ridiculous. I just okay, now I have to stop babbling.
All right, and today on the Internet, we're getting more details from the police report, and I guess there was either an audio tape or a videotape of the conversation between the officer who arrested Senator Craig and the senator. And the senator was trying to throw his weight around. You know, he gave him his business card as a United States senator. And then he tried to deny, you know, he said, well, I may have touched your foot, but I wasn't tapping it. And this guy is incredulous. He said, you're lying to a police officer. You're a United States senator. And so, you know, Larry Craig... I almost said he's going down. He is going to be out of that seat sooner or later, and he just needs to figure that out. The sooner, the better.
I think he, you know, I have mixed emotions. I think he should not resign. I think he should run for re-election in 08.
Okay.
gives Democrats a chance in Idaho if he stays. It's just, you know, the guy is, this is an amazing tale of, it's a cautionary tale for all the closeted Republicans that they should just come out and get on with their lives. I mean, it's all over the literature, you know, as far as psychologically or anybody who cares about our friends that might be gay or lesbian. So give me a break and get on with it.
Yeah. All right, Scott, let's get into military and veterans issues now. And if people want to comment, you're welcome to call the program. Scott Dick is with us this entire hour. And our toll-free number is 888-573-8372. Translates to 1-888-5-PETER-B. Now, first up on my list here is that the president has announced a need for additional cash to fund the occupation in Iraq. He got $100 billion, roughly, at the end of May. And that is was supposed to be enough money to carry the operations through the end of the fiscal year, September 30. But now he's asking for an additional $50 billion, and this presents a couple of key questions. But one of the issues that comes up first is that the newly minted replacement for Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, apparently didn't know the White House was going to make this request. Now, help me understand this, Scott. Wouldn't a supplemental appropriation be based on projections from the Pentagon about what is needed for the time period in question? And if the numbers didn't come from Gates, where the hell did they come from?
Well, of course it has to be driven by the Pentagon, and they have some programs on the works. They have the MRAP program, which we're going to talk about, and some other things. But if Gates didn't know about it, it's definitely not coming from the Pentagon, because he's the one that sends that stuff forward. I mean, he actually, Rumsfeld tamed the military liaisons to Congress, so it didn't come from them. It came from the president. That tells me that the hacks in the White House, not the Pentagon, are the ones that are pulling some kind of political maneuver to probably put this, float this in the House, in the Senate, and get on record all the Democrats who are soft on crime in Iraq. Because
mm-hmm.
we're talking about law and order now, is what the Republicans are trying to make this a security issue.
Now, this report came from an unlikely source, the Fox News Channel. Host Britt Hume revealed that Secretary of Defense Gates was unaware of the White House plans. A Pentagon spokesman said Defense Secretary Gates saw the published report this morning and said, quote, "This is news to me."
See, that is an amazing admission by Gates that he didn't even go, uh-huh, and then get on the phone. He acknowledged that this was really, it's a headshot from the rear. This is, they're doing to Gates what they did to Colin Powell, Peter. You know, he's come out a couple times against the White House in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, he has ceased the bootlicking of Rumsfeld. And this is really odd. This could be just a maneuver to see if they can get rid of Gates. I don't know. My mind is just spinning over this. This seems so unfair, unsportsmanlike. The guy's on the team. They invited him on the team. They got him through the confirmation process. And now basically what they're doing is sticking a shiv in his back.
Now, let me add to the point of that shiv, okay, the sharpness of it. And I'm reading from thinkprogress.org, the blog, here on Thursday. Gates' admission of being out of the loop on the funding request coincides with a report by the McClatchy newspapers out of Washington that military brass are trying to, quote, distance themselves from the president on Iraq strategy. And here's a quote from McClatchy. The Pentagon said Wednesday it won't make a single unified recommendation to President Bush during next month's strategy assessment, but instead will allow top commanders to make individual presentations. Military analysts called the move unusual for an institution that ordinarily doesn't air its differences in public, especially while its troops are deployed in combat. Here's a quote from Jeffrey White, a military analyst for the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. The professional military guys are going to the non-professional military guys and saying, resolve this. That's what it sounds like. White said it suggests that the military commanders want to be able to distance themselves from Iraq strategy by making it clear that whatever course is followed is the president's decision and not what commanders agreed on. What do you make of this, Scott?
This sounds like paybacks to me, Peter. I hear paybacks in the red. I see the red flare just went up, and it is, I think, a result of a retired general shooting off his mouth, a guy named Keene, who used to be the chief of staff. He was center in the, after the Shinseki resigned, there was a purge of army generals, and Keene was Rumsfeld's hatchet man. He resurfaced and sold the Surge to the president with Kagan from the American Enterprise Institute. Had nothing to do with the generals in active duty, had nothing to do with the generals in Iraq. This sounds like a mini rebellion to me. That's very unusual, and it sounds like a pretty fair analysis that they're going to lay their cards, because they've already been blamed for a lot of stuff. Rice blamed the military for failures in Iraq. Keene, so much in an interview with PBS, said there was a failure of the military to get a grasp on all this in Iraq, and he's the one who set them straight. Now, can you imagine what the active generals are thinking when this junior, I can't say the word they're probably thinking, rectum, comes out of the woodwork, sells the search to Bush, and now he's a senior advisor to Petraeus, making monthly trips to Iraq?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's more like a political commissar, and they just need to be saying, hey, you can do whatever you want, but we're not lining up behind the president and lying anymore because Rumsfeld's gone.
Well, after the break, we'll add one more element to this discussion, and that is the comments from General Peter Pace, who is on his way out the door at the Pentagon as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And, well, we'll get his comments and add that to this mix in just a moment. Scott Dick is with us this hour. Your calls and comments welcome on military, veterans issues, and the occupation of Iraq. Toll free, it's 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Mike, if you want to go ahead and do the traffic, you can.
All right, let's take a look at traffic, and good afternoon, everybody. Let's take a look at the very latest. Let's start off with a problem working right now in Salinas. Southbound 101 at Spence, it's a box of, get ready for this, only in Salinas, a box of lettuce in the left lane, and it's being reported to CHP. Soledad Camp Oria Gloria at 101. A grass fire being reported there. Fire department crews summoned to the scene there. They should be on scene, to be quite frank with you folks. Also want to take a look at Prunedale, southbound 101 at Echo Valley Road. A two-vehicle crash. Everything is off to the shoulder there. And a quick look at Santa Cruz. No problems. Report Monterey, Carmel. Checking in with no major stalls or accidents to report at this time. This report brought to you by Lawyers.com. When you need a lawyer, trust Lawyers.com to help you find lawyers in your local area fast, easy, and free to use. The Lawyers.com service provides a wealth of information to help you make an informed decision. Visit Lawyers.com today. I'm Mike, that traffic on KRXA.
were killers. I couldn't get no relief. The bungalow was surrounded, and a voice loud and clear said, come on out with your hands up, I will blow you out of here. There was a face in the window, the TV cameras rolled.
A little traffic by the bay. Let's talk about what's happening, particularly in Cupertino, Stevens Creek.
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're talking military and veterans issues and, of course, the war in Iraq. And if you have a question, a comment, or an opinion, bring it on, as Bush would say. Yeah, bring it on. 888-5-PETER-B or 24-7, you can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. So, Scott Dick, just before the break, you and I were talking about these various issues related to General Petraeus giving his report. You talked about General Keane, who appears to have become very influential because of his support for the surge. The other element here that's curious is that against all of this the discussion about the future policies in Iraq, outgoing Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair Peter Pace issued a statement saying that we really have no choice, but we have to reduce the U.S. force in Iraq next year by almost half. And this is based on even the 15-month rotations that are in effect now and the very real need to rest and re-equip troops, as well as to be prepared for other potentialities, such as reacting after a U.S. attack on Iran.
This is the first time that Pace has actually told the truth. I mean, he was a yes man for Rumsfeld from day one he was appointed. And so now that he's gone, and most unceremoniously, he can speak the truth. And so that's what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm not, you know, the guy is just, he's an opportunist as far as I'm concerned. And that's sad for a Marine four-star general as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that this is, if we go back to last December, when the Pentagon generals made it very clear that almost to a man, they did not support the surge, and Bush had to go recruit Fallon and Petraeus and others who were not, didn't appear to be immediately in the promotion chain, and it appears that given that what we described a minute ago, that these generals are going to give individual reports and recommendations instead of a group one. We have Pace kind of setting a marker here that we must reduce our troop presence in Iraq at least by half next year. Is this a rear guard action with the Pentagon trying to assert itself and push back against the administration?
Yeah, that's what I mean by him finally telling the truth. He was, I don't know. You know, I'm speculating now, Peter, that he was against the surge. And I want to clear something up. Keane wasn't a supporter of the surge. He was the architect of the surge, along with Kagan.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point was that he said, we should win, we can win. And it was the first time anybody had sat down with Bush and told him how we could win, and that was securing the population, which was not part of the military strategy beforehand. So 3 years we basically putzed around in Iraq, and we didn't have a strategy, and Keane admits that in an interview with PBS.
Okay.
So he sells, he designs and helps plan the surge. He sells it to Bush. Now he's got to sell it to the active duty generals who are on the line of fire, because when Keane, if this fails, all he has to do is go to his brokerage company that he started. And he's on the boards of a bunch of big companies. Mm-hmm. So he's not going to get hurt if this fails. He's just going to go back into obscurity and collect big checks.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys on active duty have, it's their legacy, it's their history, it's their combat experience. They have a lot to lose. And, you know, Keane's never led troops in Iraq. He's never been, he was this assistant chief of staff, and then he left active duty. He was a henchman for Rumsfeld.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see where there's a, you know, the Pentagon is just, they're probably beside themselves with, why does this guy, who was never a big thinker, who didn't have a lot of play in the Pentagon, suddenly in charge of the Iraqi war? And where's the Iraqi, the war czar? We haven't heard a peep out of that guy.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what is Doug Lute doing? And do we have any indication that as a war czar, or whatever title they actually gave him, that he's made any difference whatsoever?
No indication. And Keane is one of the guys who turned the war czar down. So he's getting the best of both worlds. He gets to be the war czar with no responsibility. And he has authority from the president. All he has to do is shake his big butt around, because he's a big old guy. And, you know, he can pull his Drew Carey act all around. He can vent and fume. And they all know that he's representing the president of the United States. He's more powerful than Gates right now. And so the Pentagon, the only way they can work around this is by sending out these red flares saying, hey, this isn't going to be consensus. The surge is going to be what the surge is. Mm-hmm. This is how we're going to report it. And so I don't know why we even have a war czar and what he does and his role and all that. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Time for a break. We'll continue with Scott Dick after the break, and we're going to go to the phones in the next segment. So if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. Toll free, it's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show is produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill, and Brian Urban is taking your calls today. Visit our website at peterbcollins.com. New and improved podcasts will be available starting next week.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show as we continue with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans issues. You can call in and talk with us, and we'd be delighted to hear from you. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number, 888-573-8372. And Holly knows the number. She's on the line from Eureka. Hi, Holly.
Hi. This is off the topic, but does Scott have any help for me in deciding which of the many veterans groups that are asking for donations are better than others?
That's interesting. Scott?
Well, if your only two choices were between the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, I'd go with the Veterans of Foreign Wars. But I would go more, depending on your own personal philosophy, with something like votevets.org or something like that, Vets Against the War.
My question wasn't clear. I sent some money to a group called Paralyzed Veterans of America. Since then, I've gotten more requests from them, and I'm getting requests from the USO, from a group called Help Handicapped Veterans. Who should I talk to find out which of these are apparently helping people in the rehab process in the hospital?
That's a tough one because they've sprung up like a cottage industry.
That's what I was concerned about.
Well, and Holly, just from what you described, it sounds like the first group that you sent money to sold your name and your address to another group.
Right. But do you, Scott, would you repeat again that veterans group that you said?
Well, the Veterans of Foreign War, the VFW.
No, Vote Vets.
Vote Vets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and is there a... how do I get in touch with them? I don't have a computer.
Oh, okay. Let me pull it up right here and see if there's an address here on the website. We had one of the organizers of Vote Vets on the program, and I'm really impressed with them.
Okay.
They are smart and strategic, and they have created some very interesting radio and television commercials using, for example, Major General Batiste, the Army General, who has criticized the Bush administration for not supporting the troops. So I think they do a great job. Now, I'm pulling up the Contact Us page, and all they have is an email address.
Okay.
So let me see. Vote Vets Action Fund.
Well, Peter, while you do
ahead, Scott.
Let me make a point to everybody that, you know, there are vets in every community, and I just read a statistic before Peter's show. 58,000 veterans, Vietnam veterans, have committed suicide since the end of the war.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And there are
that's as many as were killed.
Exactly. Yeah. And about 200,000 still remain homeless. And we're going to get a whole new crop of men and young women that are going to go through the same things that our Vietnam vets, whether we give them big parades or not.
Right.
So I would just think locally. I would find out who, like, from...
Oh, I know the local group. Yeah, they're great.
Exactly. Monterey County... and I don't know, he said where you look back.
She's in Eureka, Humboldt County.
Yeah. There's a good group here.
Yeah.
I would just look at them, and if you're going to apply some cash in a direction, I'd do it locally. I just find people that are, and you can check them out. If you don't have the web, you can have somebody who has the web to get into the data and find out if the majority of the money goes to helping the vets versus fundraising or having fancy plasma computer monitors in their offices.
Right.
I'll tell you what this, Holly, when we finish up, I'll put you on hold. Give Brian your phone number since you don't have email.
Mm-hmm.
And after the show, I will call you and give you Carl Young's telephone number.
Okay.
He is the organizer of the veteran stand downs that have occurred in Humboldt County the last 2 years.
Yes.
And
I've been in touch with him.
You could ask him the same question and say, Carl, I'd like to help. Who do you think really could benefit the most?
Okay, I can get in touch with Carl. I think I've talked to him before.
Okay, good.
All right, thanks
now,
a
here's,
lot.
I do have the address for Vote Vets, okay?
Okay, good.
It is 1123 Broadway, Suite 700, New York, New York, and the zip is 10010.
Thank you.
Okay?
All right, thanks.
All right, Holly, thank
Bye-bye.
You.
And, for looking after our veterans.
Yeah, I really appreciate that because, they need a lot of support, and we know it's not going to come from our government. Scott Dick, next to update us on the MRAP. and explain to people what the MRAP is and how the current plans to deploy in Iraq have been scaled back.
Well, the MRAP is a big honking vehicle, and it's massive in size. It's a truck, basically. So it's not as sexy as a tank or an infantry fighting vehicle like the Bradley. But it does one thing really well. It survives IED explosions, improvised explosive device, and it launches itself in the air, unlike a Humvee, much slower, so you have a lot less cases of traumatic brain injury, et cetera. There was a report from a commander whose soldiers have been involved. They have MRAPs in over 300 IED explosions, and he has not lost one troop. Now, the tragedy of this is they've been asking for MRAPs in Iraq since 05. So Gates got on this. Rumsfeld apparently didn't think it was important. Neither did the Marine Corps, because they didn't think we were going to be in Iraq this long. Gates pushed the $5.8 billion, that getting us about 3,500 MRAPs into Iraq, and now it looks like they're going to have to scale it down. They want to fly them in. They want to spend $700 million flying them in. And the MRAPs are effective against IEDs, but they're not as effective against the new improvised shape charges.
The
so they
EFP.
Want to add $700,000, $70,000, whatever, up armor kit to it. And so really what's happening is the troops that need them aren't going to get them as fast as Gates and the Bush administration promised everybody publicly. This is all very private. You know, it's in the Army Times, for example, but you don't see it on the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen any recent reporting about that. So I'm pleased you brought it forward. Go ahead.
Well, it's just that, you know, they do have watchdogs that look after our troops, and it ain't the Bush administration, and they're the ones that report on it. And, you know, all of these, they're just the same. They get the same briefings as any other Pentagon source. They just know what they're listening for, and then they publish it. So when they hear MRAP and delays and half the number going this year and $700 million to fly them in versus on the boat, it took 2 years to put it together, you know, they write about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Scott, next I want to talk about a decision that was reached by a court-martial earlier this week, and they acquitted one of the highest-ranking individuals who was charged with crimes related to the atrocities at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Army Lieutenant Colonel Steve Jordan was acquitted on all of the charges related to being responsible for abuse at the jail. He was reprimanded for essentially trying to cover up during the investigation of the case, but the charges were dropped. And, two officers were disciplined by the Army, but neither faced criminal charges or dismissal. So we now have, I think, successfully contained the responsibility for what occurred at Abu Ghraib. And Colonel Pappas, I think, is the highest-ranking person who's been reprimanded. But I think that the rank of sergeant, Charlie Grainer and his cohorts, is the highest that we have seen of individuals who have actually been convicted and sent to jail for their role at Abu Ghraib.
In situations like this, it's very dangerous to be a non-commissioned officer because they look to you. They have the least amount of capability to defend themselves effectively. They don't get much press. They're just working blue-collar working stiffs in a military uniform, and so it's easy to sacrifice those guys. And I wouldn't be surprised if some military guy didn't whisper, hey, you know, we're going to sacrifice you, but it's for a good cause, so just keep on trucking. Mm-hmm. Suck it up and, you know, drive on.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he was reprimanded for failure to obey a lawful order from a superior commissioned officer, and it was an order from a two-star general not to talk about Abu Ghraib. So it wasn't that he tried to cover it up. He talked about it.
Mm.
So, and I know Tom Pappas. I served with him in Bosnia, and he's an honorable guy. So what Galloway said is he's just not talking because, you know, it's very likely if he told the truth, they put him up on charges and threatened him with going to Leavenworth.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's remained silent except for Lipinski, who lost a star. She retired as a colonel. Her hearts don't bleed for her people there. She's still in the, you know, in the $90,000, $80,000 retirement range.
Well,
something like that.
Former General Karpinski, as you did point out, was demoted. And I just got an email update from truthout.org. Jeff Millard, who served in Iraq and is now a reporter at Truthout, has a video interview with Janice Karpinski. And there's no transcript here, so I can't read parts of it to you. But the headline says, they knew what they were doing.
Well, Peter, the other thing is,
Kravinsky and this lieutenant colonel, I forgot his Jordan, were both reservists. So you have, that's another lesson.
Mm-hmm.
If you're active duty, you're safe. You can do about anything you want, but if you're a reservist or enlisted guy, you're going to be in deep kimchi if something like this goes down again. This is a cautionary tale, and we all have received the law of land warfare about illegal orders and our military duty, our legal duty to refuse them, and it's what happens when people don't. It's appalling, and it goes right up to Sanchez and all that other general that went to make Abu Ghraib more like Gitmo. I forgot his name.
Jeffrey Miller.
Miller.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys are operating with impunity. I've seen some stuff about the black services. You know, I'm talking about the CIA and other mm-hmm. special secret services.
Right.
Talking about how any kind of public knowledge of what they're really doing would endanger significant intelligence operations being conducted in concert and in conjunction with the work they're doing in Afghanistan and in Iraq. Blah, 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 mushroom cloud in New York City, 911.
And General Taguba, who was charged to write a report and did so, was marginalized, given the silent treatment, and ultimately cashiered out of the military in early retirement.
Well, if you can just imagine a catapult from the Roman times, just put guys like Shinseki in that seat and click, whoomph, and then Taguba the same thing. Guys who told the truth, guys who stood up to the breast, guys who did the job that they were commissioned to do and honored all of us by doing it where they were placed in the dump, the trash heap. It's disgusting,
yeah.
And it's completely normal.
Scott,
it's nothing new, Peter.
Scott Dick with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and here's another item that just surfaced. My friend Jason Leopold, a reporter at truthout.org, posted a story here on Thursday, and this is a follow-up on something that you and I have discussed on several occasions, and also on this program, Mikey Weinstein, who is the founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, has been on our program, and it's another incident of Christian proselytizing inside the military, and these incidents occurred this year at the Pentagon. According to documents obtained by Truth Out and Mikey Weinstein, a guy named David Kistler, the president of Hickory, North Carolina-based Hope Ministries International, went on a D.C. crusade along with dozens of members of the evangelical organization for 2 weeks, and that included 2 days inside the Pentagon itself. And Kistler was quoted as saying, "The rapture will soon vacuum up people like George W. Bush to heaven, and he will leave. Ted Kennedy, Joe Biden, and Hillary Clinton will not be raptured. And following the rapture, the Antichrist will appear. Children will be microchipped." And Kistler, after these 2 days at the Pentagon, wrote to his colleagues, "I am thrilled to report that three souls were saved among those who attended those events." Just amazing.
It's really amazing. I think people should be worried about that as much as anything else that's going on in our country. It's as scary as secret wiretapping and all that. And Peter, I have a couple of quotes, and when we come back from the break, I want to talk just some historical quotes. But this one, you know, Bush went to talk to the American Legion, so he did the VFW. Now he's doing the American Legion, and it was in Reno, and he said. Here's what the article. Bush gave an optimistic assessment of recent events in the war, now in its fifth year. "There are unmistakable signs that our strategy is achieving the objectives we set out. The momentum is now on our side." How many times have you heard that?
A dozen.
From other losing countries that were losing wars.
Yeah.
And that was a famous quote in Vietnam. And I have to say, I saw a blog where some guy was talking about the Tet Offensive. And I want to make this clear, folks. People say that we lost a Tet. No, we didn't lose a Tet. It was a significant military victory over the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese Regular Army. What the loss was, the U.S. government and its senior political people in the administration and the senior generals said that they had the Vietnamese on their last leg. They're in the throes of their destruction. The insurgency was done. It was on its last leg. And so when this conventional force attacked, and it was so strong, it was so powerful, it was so organized, it was so regular military, as well as the battalions of Vietnamese insurgents they threw against American troops, it was such a shock, and it proved that the government was lying. That's how Tet was the turning point of the war. It just it detailed in vivid color that our administration and the military brass was lying to us straight-faced every day by telling us the insurgency was over.
We're going to take a break and return with Scott Dick right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Okay, Mike, if you're there, we can do the traffic.
For those of you that think that gospel music has gone too far, you think we've gotten too radical.
Mike, you can go ahead and do the traffic if you're there. Mike, you can go ahead and do the traffic if you're there. You there, Mike? Go ahead and do
that. Yeah, I am. Hey, guys. Well, let's go ahead and give you the very latest as far as traffic is concerned and get you caught up to date with a couple of problems. First of all, Salinas still got the problem southbound 101 at Spence. It's a box of lettuce still being reported in the left lane. Soledad, it's Camphoria Gloria at Highway 101, a grass fire reported there, and that one is still ongoing. Prunedale southbound 101 at Echo Valley Road, a two-vehicle crash, apparently now cleared, which is great news. And taking a look at Morgan Hill, looks like southbound 101 at Cochran, there is a two-vehicle fender bender being reported there. It's in the two left lanes. And another problem just coming in, it's in the Santa Cruz Mountains, Highway 17 at Laurel Road. Watch out for multiple deer walking very close to the lanes, and also one of them in the right-hand lane at this point. The support brought to you by Mancini Sleep World. Live life, rest easy during Mancini Sleep World Labor Day sleep-free mattress sale. Rest easy with no payments till 2009. Call 1-800-64-SLEEP or visit sleepworld.com today. I'm Mike. That's traffic on KRXA.
Thanks, Mike.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. And before I return to Scott Dick, I would just like to take a moment to honor the family of Jeff and Peggy Hubbard of Clovis, California. This week, they buried their son, Nathan Hubbard, who died in combat in Iraq. He was one of the 14 soldiers killed when a Black Hawk crashed in northern Iraq. And the Hubbard family also gave Nathan's brother, Jared, who was killed by a roadside bomb in Ramadi. And Jared also was killed along with his best friend, 21-year-old Jeremiah Barrow.
Say hello.
Now, Scott, an interesting development just over the past couple of days after a very serious incident in Karbala where devout Muslims had gathered for a religious festival or observance. Muqtada al-Sadr has announced a six-month suspension of activities by his brigades. And they have been instructed not to attack Americans, not to attack other Iraqis. And on the face of it, this could be a very interesting development. Now, when I mentioned this to you earlier today, you said, wow, give me 6 months, and I could freshen up my troops, rearm them, re-equip them, retrain them, and they'd come back bigger, better, and stronger than ever.
Absolutely. I mean, why would he want to just dwindle his forces away? It looks like the United States may be either reducing, or we may have to reduce, our support and our troop strength. He has 6 months. He can basically eliminate. What it does, Peter, is that he can eliminate himself as a target, and then the U.S. government can focus on other targets and where erode their ability to fight down. He can retrofit. He can get his Iranian trainers in. They can really create a dynamic. 6 months of training, that's more than we get in our boot camp and advanced individual training. We get about 5 months. So 6 months, you could really hone this militia into a real army, equip them, they're rested, they're retrofitted, and they're ready to go. 6 months from now is February, so you know they may be ready to really start something strong in the spring. In the meantime, they look like a friend, and so we'll just let them go.
Well, and there is the ancient phrase about keeping your powder dry, and given all of the discussion, Muqtada al-Sadr has to be aware of what Peter Pace has said, what the Congress has demanded, the reaction of the Bush administration, and it's not too hard for them to read that handwriting that sooner or later the U.S. will leave Iraq, and this is one of those phony arguments about why we need to stay there, because they will wait us out. And whether we stay 6 months, 6 years, 60 years, my belief is that whenever we decide that it's safe for us to leave or just that we're going to leave because we should, there are going to be problems, and there are people who are hanging back and, you know, collecting their resources and getting charged up, prepared to take action at whatever point the U.S. Relinquishes or reduces its presence.
Well, Peter, the point that most people miss is that it's not really a waiting game. It's only a waiting game for us. They're at home. They're not going anywhere. They're not waiting to get admitted to, you know, University of Washington. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to spend money. They just can go about their business and trying to survive and take care of their families and find a job and all that stuff. They're not waiting. So we're the ones waiting, and we're the ones expending all the billions of dollars and having casualties inflicted on us. They're just doing their thing. So when people say, well, they're waiting for us to leave, no, they're not. It's pretty much binary. Mm-hmm. We're there and we're not there. They're going to do whatever they're going to do.
Very good point. Scott, one other item that you brought to my attention is that the U.S. Army and other military units, in order to meet recruitment goals, have lowered the standards, both in terms of education level and criminal records. And this has produced a new crop of recruits who are causing some problems.
Well, the headline for the Army Times from this week is something that really scares people in the military, and it's gangsters in the ranks, and it is the headline story. It's talking about violence and drugs and weapons, and not only organized crime and gangs have put selected members in the military and the police forces for as long as the country has existed, and then they come back trained in weapons and tactics and techniques, communication styles, all that. But now we have more and more coming into the military, and they're banding together while they're on active duty. And there's a case of a gang initiation that went wrong, and the guy actually died. And he was beaten by 11 members in his unit. Had nothing to do with hazing. It was military gang initiation, right? So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about sophisticated training, weapons training, communications training. Some of these guys might be involved in intelligence, and it worries people. We did a whole gang thing in the 80s, and it's not fun to be in a unit where they suspect gang members to be active.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very hard to identify and root out.
No, a lot of people get hurt. A lot of innocent people get hurt. You know, a lot of stupid stuff goes on that people pull up their shirts and look for tattoos and ridiculous things. It's impossible to pick out the bad guys from the good guys, and so you get swept up in this sort of military, everybody's guilty sort of military mentality.
Well, Scott, thank you very much. We caught up on a lot of interesting issues and news stories here, and I appreciate your contribution.
Thank you. Do I have 20 more seconds?
No, you don't. Time is up. I got to run. Thank you, Scott.
Maybe next week.
All right. We'll talk to Scott again next week. Coming up next hour, Jack Miles, a professor from UC Irvine, joins us to talk about how the UN authorization for the U.S. to occupy Iraq is expiring at the end of the year. What's going to happen? We'll discuss that coming up next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Larry from Acme Coffee, and if, like me, you own a business and are tired of waiting through aggressive sales reps pushing you to advertise on mediocre network TV stations or stale radio broadcasters, contact KRXA 540 sales manager Larry Rathall at 394-5792. AM 540's committed listener base will help you grow your business. I know, because they're helping me grow mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Anything you say can or will be used against you in court of law.
The arresting officer reading Senator Larry Craig his rights, then listening to the senator's story.
You said our feet bumped. I believe they did, because I reached down and scooted over, and the next thing I knew, under the bathroom divider comes a card that says police.
The officer becomes exasperated with what he calls the senator's untruthfulness.
I've never had to bring anybody to jail because everybody's been truthful to me.
I don't want you to take me to jail, and I think
I'm not going to take you to jail as long as you be cooperative, but I'm not going to lie.
My hand come below the divider? Yes, it did.
It happened in Iraq tonight. Military cargo plane carrying three senators and a House member forced to take evasive maneuvers to avoid ground fire after taking off from Baghdad Airport. Senators Mel Martinez, Richard Shelby, James Inhofe, and Congressman Bud Kramer on board. No injuries reported. Months after the massacre at Virginia Tech, report released today suggests lives could have been saved if things had been done differently, if a warning had gone out sooner.
Won Sung Hui Cho killed his first two victims in a Virginia Tech dormitory early April 16th. There was no stopping the wholesale slaughter that followed at Norris Hall. While that's the central finding of a four-month investigation, the report also does blame university officials and police for waiting 2 hours to issue a watered-down alert to the campus. Warning the students, faculty, and staff, the report concludes, might have made a difference.
As CBS's Bob Orr, reaction from University President Charles Steger.
Based on what we knew at the time, we did the right things, quite honestly.
Former astronaut Lisa Nowak gets to remove that high-tech law enforcement fashion accessory from her ankle.
When the ankle monitor batteries run out, Lisa Nowak told the judge she only has a couple of minutes to change them, even while driving.
On the occasion that it happened on the highway, there was no safe shoulder area to pull over.
Judge Mark Lubit wasn't convinced by that or several other arguments. One that did sway him was that Nowak's intended victim, Colleen Shipman, went to Houston several times to visit her boyfriend. Nowak also lives there with no restriction on where she can go. The judge says it's clear that the GPS monitor wouldn't have protected Shipman. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
GAO progress report in Iraq says there isn't any. Reaction at the White House.
In the view of the White House and the Pentagon, the report contains some errors of fact and omission. And spokesman Tony Snow says the situation in Iraq is more than just a matter of whether certain benchmarks are being met.
The real question that people have is, what's going on in Iraq? Are we making progress? Militarily, is the surge having an impact? The answer is yes.
Snow suggests the draft report was leaked by opponents of the president's Iraq strategy, and he urges people to wait for next month's report from America's top general there, David Petraeus. Mark Knoller, CBS News, The White House.
This is CBS News.
Giving your house a whole new look will put a smile on your face. So will saving money on it during the Labor Day sale at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. From August 30th to September 3rd, save $8 a gallon on Duration coatings, 30% on our exceptional paints and stains, and 25% on select wall coverings, too. Hurry, sale ends Monday, September 3rd, for painting and decorating. For locations, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply.
Reason number 7 to switch to Geico. You never met a body of water you didn't like. If you love personal watercraft, you need to call Geico, because now Geico can help insure all the stuff that moves you, including PWCs. Great rates, great coverage, and personal service 24/7. Call anytime, 1-800-442-9253, or visit geico.com.
At the U.S. Open, Andy Roddick a winner today. James Blake playing tonight. But we sent CBS's Dave Barrett, and he's in search of something else besides tennis.
While watching tennis's best at the U.S. Open, you get hungry. There's the Food Village, which offers flatbread pizzas with shrimp. Want a simple hot dog? That'll be $3.75, please. There are three places where you could go upscale at dinner time, but you have to have tickets for the entire 2 weeks or have a box seat. Even then, you have to buy a pass just to get in. What? You call that out? Challenge the calls with the special U.S. Open drink, the Honey Deuce, for $12. Vodka, raspberry liqueur, three melon balls, and crushed ice are served up. You can keep the commemorative glass. Dave Barrett, CBS News, New York.
Is it art? It is controversial. The showcased features in a prestigious religious art competition in Sydney, Australia. One, a portrait of Osama bin Laden in a Christ-like pose, and then there's the statue of the Virgin Mary wearing a burqa. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Giving your house a whole new look will put a smile on your face. So will saving money on it during the Labor Day sale at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. From August 30th to September 3rd, save $8 a gallon on Duration coatings, 30% on our exceptional paints and stains, and 25% on select wall coverings, too. Hurry, sale ends Monday, September 3rd, for painting and decorating. For locations, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply.
It's your walls and your ideas, your kitchen and your creativity, your garage and your vision. It's your home, from the small jobs that renew to more ambitious ideas that transform. At Ace Hardware, we're here to help you.
Come to your neighborhood Ace and start your project now for paint, plumbing, home organization, serious hardware, and great gadgets, plus a team of Ace folks to help you get just what you need to make your home beautiful.
Ace is your place, with everything for your home, plus expert advice and solutions that work for you. Ace, the helpful place.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 7 minutes past. And joining me is Professor Jack Miles from the University of California at Irvine, where he teaches English and religious studies. And according to Wikipedia, he has written widely on religion, politics, and culture for The Atlantic, The New York Times, The Boston Globe, The Washington Post. He worked at the L.A. Times for a while. And it says here that you were a Jesuit seminarian, Professor.
That's right, many years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm a Jesuit product from the Chicago province. I grew up in Cincinnati.
Is that so?
And went to St. Xavier and then did a little bit of work at Loyola in Chicago later on.
Yes, I once taught there.
At Loyola?
Yes, 4 years.
Uh-huh. Great. And how long have you been at UC Irvine?
At UC Irvine, I am a new hire. I began on July 1st. I've been in Los Angeles in other capacities, as you mentioned, at the Los Angeles Times, and I was with the Getty Museum for a time. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I love the Getty, both of them, the old one and the new one up on the hill there.
Yes.
I've enjoyed them on many occasions. Well, I asked you today to join us because this week you published a powerful op-ed in the New York Times raising questions about the legal status of U.S. forces in Iraq going forward. And you recite the history, and going back to October of 2003, we established a mandate for U.S. occupation of Iraq. That was after the original authority given to Paul Bremer and the occupation team had expired. In June of 2004, the Security Council passed a resolution that stipulated that by the end of June of 2004, the occupation will end and the Coalition Provisional Authority will cease to exist and Iraq will reassert its full sovereignty. The current mandate expires at the end of December, and you raise questions about whether or not it will be renewed and on what terms. This is a very interesting issue, and given Senator John Warner of Virginia's recent comments, where he's critical of the current policy, wants to start bringing troops home, he was one of the first to raise issues about war powers questions and whether the occupation is even remotely covered by the congressional authorization. So there are kind of two fronts here, the UN and our domestic legal policy structure.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I didn't speak about the domestic one, which Senator Byrd has taken the lead in denouncing from the very beginning. I was concerned only in this op-ed with the United Nations authorization,
mm-hmm.
which is, according to the Security Council's resolutions, renewable only now at the request of duly constituted authority in now sovereign Iraq. These requests have come annually from three different prime ministers, Iyad Alawi, Ibrahim al-Jafari, and the current the current prime minister, al-Maliki.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the surprise, very little covered in the press, is that the Iraqi parliament has voted to require the prime minister to pass any new request for renewal of the mandate before the parliament for approval, and such approval is not going to be forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
So if that happens, then what? Then it would seem that all the foreign forces that belong to what the UN always refers to as the multinational force now would be in the country illegally.
And there isn't much multi left to the multinational force, that's for sure.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, you cite that in June of this year, the Iraqi parliament passed a bill requiring that the next renewal has to come with their advice and consent. But you point out that Maliki has not signed it, and he could conceivably veto it. Is there any update on the status of that bill? Of course, they've been on vacation, so I can't imagine that it's changed.
That's right. I haven't heard any update on its status. I presume that it has been left where it was. That is, the parliament has approved it. He has not yet stopped it. The interesting question is whether, given his steadily worsening relations with the Americans, he might choose not to stop it. You recall the exchange that took place after Hillary Clinton had sharp words for al-Maliki. He was visiting Syria and said that Iraq could find friends elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday, President Ahmadinejad of Iran made bold to say that a power vacuum was about to occur in the region, and that Iran was ready to step in cooperation with, quote, our friends in Saudi Arabia. I don't know how friendly Saudi Arabia feels in general toward Iran, but clearly with the world's third largest oil reserves at stake, it would be possible for the prime minister of Iraq or any functional government, if they ever get one, to turn for various kinds of development support to any number of willing partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Maliki threat is interesting, to find friends elsewhere. Do you think he knows about MySpace?
Well, we'll find out.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. Certainly, we do have to be concerned about the threat that he has made. And I'm sure Bush is having a hard time because this is the guy we selected. We pushed Jafari aside and forced the Iraqis to rubber stamp our approved guy, which is Maliki. And now we have American figures, Carl Levin, as well as Senator Warner, joined by others, saying that Maliki's got to go. And this is one case, and I'm loath to ever agree with Mr. Bush, but he did score a point in his comments saying that we shouldn't have politicians in Washington, and I would include him, dictating who leads the sovereign Iraqi government.
That's, of course, true. Now, if for whatever reason Maliki should decide to step down, it would seem to me that two possibilities loom. One would be a long and protracted struggle over who should succeed him, a struggle that might well last past the December expiration of the current mandate. The other would be something approaching a coup d'etat. It's clear that Iraqis are hungry for anybody strong enough to impose order, and clearly there is a tradition in the region of the all-powerful military strongman who keeps the lid on by brute force. The person who would seem the likeliest candidate to play that role is Muqtada al-Sadr. And, of course, he's certainly not the Bush administration's choice.
And he doesn't have a lobby shop in Washington supporting any promotion for him the way Alawi does.
Alawi, I think, is probably, you may have seen an op-ed piece that he published in the Washington Post, more or less pushing his own candidacy, and it seemed calling for direct action from outside Iraq to remove al-Maliki. But he would have the smallest chance of all nameable candidates to pull the country together. Almost all of his real support is outside Iraq rather than within the country. So,
well, I think he has a stealth approach. He'll promote Chalabi, who's unacceptable to virtually everybody, and then he can be the compromise candidate.
Well, but even if that strategy succeeds in putting him in office, it won't succeed in bringing about some kind of new amity between the Iraqi legislature and the U.S. government or the U.S. Occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it would bring a peace between the contending factions in Iraq either.
We're talking with Jack Miles here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And, Professor, what do you make of Muqtada al-Sadr's recent order following a deadly incident in Karbala with Shiite-on-Shiite violence? He has ordered his brigades to stand down for 6 months, not to attack Iraqis, and, significantly, he's instructed them not to attack Americans.
This could, I think, be a ploy on his part to make himself seem more statesmanlike and ready for high office. It might be something that would appeal to Ayatollah Ali Sistani, who is the highest and most respected Shiite religious authority in the country and not someone who favors uprisings. You may recall that it was Sistani's intervention that brought the Shiite uprising in Najaf to a close. So if it could ever come about that that Sistani would, so to speak, anoint al-Sadr as if he had now come of age and could be trusted with high office, that would might well do it, put him in at the top. Whether the United States would abide by that remains to be be seen.
Indeed. We got to take a break, and we'll continue in just a moment. Our guest is Professor Jack Miles. He's new at UC Irvine, and he wrote a great op-ed piece called Occupational Hazard, published in Wednesday's New York Times. If you'd like to talk with us, I've got lines open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955. Or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays from 4 to 5 p.m., listen as we deal with life-changing issues that affect all of us. Our fears, passions, anger, addictions, the law of attraction, and how we change ourselves so we can live an extraordinary life. Join me, Sheila Gale, along with Ava, as we share tools for change that work. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Life 105, Saturdays 4 to 5, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, with education, prevention, and treatment for alcohol and drug addiction.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
BTA, all offering free rides. Hollister Fairview Road at Fallon Road, we have apparently a disabled truck. It's a truck towing a trailer that's stuck in the lanes. It looks like they were attempting to make a U-turn. Now they're stalled. Morgan Hill, southbound 101 at Cochran, three-car crash blocking the middle lane. Prunedale, 156 at Meridian, we have a stall in the right lane. Salinas, Highway 68 at Foster Road, we have a vehicle partially blocking the left lane there. No problems to report on Highway 17 in either direction. Highway 1 looking good between Monterey and Carmel at this point. This report brought to you by Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk. Pepsi presents free Friday night bands at the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk. Tomorrow, these are the Tubes. Two free shows at 6:30 and 8:30.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on 22 minutes after the hour. About 10 minutes from now, Brent Badowski returns, former Capitol Hill staffer. He got slimed by a reporter on the Fox News Channel, and he steamed about it. He'll explain. We continue now with Jack Miles, a professor of English and Religious Studies at UC Irvine, that's in Southern California, and the author of a great op-ed published in Wednesday's New York Times this week. And we're joined by Dave from Eureka. Welcome, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Professor Miles, I believe the rest of the world sees our involvement in Iraq as the total fraud that it is, and they see it accurately. I can't believe the United Nations ever would have authorized our involvement there in the first place, but for certain I would think they will not renew it. What will that mean?
Well, the United Nations did not authorize the initial invasion, and Kofi Annan was candid to say shortly thereafter that he regarded it as illegal. But what the agenda of the Security Council has been, I believe, has been through its resolutions to attempt to restore legality and gradually, you might say, steer this occupied nation back into something approaching a normal control of its own destiny. The United States, I believe, on its own, under the Bush administration, would not have bothered to seek authorization for what was done, but some of those allied with us, or those even not in country but needed for their support, insisted that this be done. And now, if the United Nations, which has, after all, been prepared to renew the mandate for the multinational force, doesn't receive the expected request from Iraq to renew it again, then there would be a kind of, you might say, a new pretext for outside actors like Iran to say the time has come, these people are in that country illegally, now the whole world knows it, the United Nations admits it,
and we would
strengthen their hand.
The United States would be a rogue nation, at least at that point, right?
It would approach that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right, Dave, thanks for a great question. Professor, if you'll indulge, I'd like to just read the last two paragraphs of your op-ed. And you're referring to Maliki's threat to find other friends. The most obvious and presumably most willing new partner for Maliki would be Shiite-dominated Iran. If things head that way while our troops are still on the ground, should the U.S. attack Iran preemptively? Some in high places favor this, but a preemptive American attack on Iran could quickly lead to an Iranian counterattack closing the Straits of Hormuz at the lower end of the Persian Gulf. The American forces would then be trapped, both their main supply line and their main evacuation route cut off. It may be time to change the slogan on the yellow ribbon from support the troops to defend the nation, rather than see the American Army of Liberation humiliatingly voted out of Iraq or have its avenue of exit cut off by opportunistic enemies. The Senate should join the Iraqi parliament through a sense of the Senate resolution and call for the next Security Council mandate to be one that requires the progressive withdrawal of all foreign forces from Iraq without haste, but with all deliberate speed. So, two points there. You raise the specter of a U.S. assault on Iran. We've been covering that in some detail again this week because we've got troubling reports that U.S. readiness is at a peak and the president has been using more and more provocative language toward Iran. How do you handicap the potential for a Bush administration attack on Iran, and how would you describe the potential blowback?
The picture as I see it, and I don't claim anything like insider information here, is that of a deepening divide among the military leadership itself. Within the military leadership itself, there clearly are some who are prepared to go on the attack, but others who are not and who are well aware of those blowback possibilities you mentioned. I honestly suspect that Secretary of Defense Gates is with those who are counseling caution. The party of the hawks would then be led by Vice President Cheney, with the president trying to decide whom to listen to. What would the blowback be? Well, the Straits of Hormuz are very narrow and can be closed by just the sinking of one or two very large ships. Iran has highly mobile speedboats. You might think of them as car bombs
that can sail across the water. And one of those detonated near a great carrier or other large ship, a tanker, for example, could do the kind of damage that we saw done to the coal.
Mm-hmm.
Time magazine recently reported that our forces have 100 million pounds of gear per combat brigade. So there's far more stuff there than could possibly be flown out. And flying all of the personnel who are out there, including all contracted laborers and Iraqis whom we might be merciful enough to rescue, could scarcely be done by air.
Yeah.
So the potential for a really serious counterattack is there, and mm-hmm. I'm quite sure that some leading military men are aware of this. What we have to hope is that their sanity will prevail.
And I would add Hezbollah in Lebanon and operators inside Iraq and the United States. Jack Miles, thanks for joining us today.
A pleasure, Peter.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones, everything's so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. MPG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides.
It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America. Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored.
Hey, hey.
And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true.
Yeah, especially on Fox News.
If you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news.
Especially Fox News.
Hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're now joined by a victim of sliming from the Fox News Channel. Brent Badowski is a distinguished fellow who worked on Capitol Hill and now writes on almost a daily basis from Washington. He returns to our program today. Hello, Brent.
Oh, how you doing, Peter?
I'm doing okay. How about you? How did you get all that slime off?
Oh, no. Actually, they did me a favor.
Yeah,
it's more of an opportunity.
Now, before we dive into this, I've just got to ask you one of the critical issues of the week, because you write for The Hill, which people outside the Beltway are just barely familiar with. It's a kind of a trade paper for people who watch the legislature and that portion of our government. And The Hill broke the story about Senator Craig. And I wanted to find out if you knew the inner workings, because I was very impressed that they got the exclusive. And as the story started to roll out on Monday of this week, they had the most accurate and detailed accounting of the police report and Senator Craig's guilty plea.
Well, I can only give a theory. Although, in fairness, it was Roll Call that was actually the first one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was The Hill.
I'm just an honest guy here.
Okay. Okay.
But I'll tell you what I think really happened. Let me cut to the chase on Craig. Had he not been for so long a demonizer of gays and a gay basher and one of these holy rollers of the Christian right in Congress, had he not done that, this probably would have worked out to have been no big deal. What actually happened was this stuff started about a month before, 2 months before it came out. And it was when the court appearance came, weeks after the original incident, and he copped a plea, is when it all exploded.
Mm-hmm.
One can argue, looking at what he actually did, frankly, it's hard for me to get all that excited. I mean, you know, if you want to have something that would do more to get prisoners to talk than sending them to Guantanamo, listen to the tape of this conversation with the policeman,
which
you cannot avoid. But it's did he put his left hand or his right hand under the stall, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was he had been being pursued for some time by the newspaper. There had been rumors about him since the early 80s.
That's an Idaho newspaper, though.
Right.
Yeah.
And
they didn't actually publish the information about the Minnesota incident and his guilty plea until after
Roll
Call
did. Right, and they hadn't published much of anything about it. And so what I think happened was, he probably was too smart by a half, not rare in Washington, thought he could cop a plea to some disorderly conduct, no one really know the difference, and it would slip by.
Mm-hmm.
He may well have copped a plea to something he would not have been convicted of,
mm-hmm.
tell you the truth. When you look at this evidence, it's pretty dicey.
Right.
The problem is, these guys are the biggest bunch of, and this is what precipitated the attack on me by somebody who is a Fox contributor. She attacked me on The Hill on the home turf, and I answered her more than in kind today. But I had said, look, you know, the phoniness and hypocrisy of these right-wing so-called Christian conservatives, okay, is only half the problem. The other half the problem is the corruption that they are hypocritical about. The lying and demonization about people who may be different than them, the attempts to turn hatred towards people, whether they're gays or Democratic war heroes, as they did with Max Cleland and John Kerry and the Swift voting. It's an attitude they have. It's worse than a culture of corruption. It's a culture of national division, smears, lies, demonization. And Larry Craig was a part of that with this kind of holier than thou going back many years. And it does seem Republicans who have these tendencies privately tend to be the most vocal. I mean, you know, it's a party full of people. One week it's somebody, a senator who was with a madam, okay, Senator Vitter. And there's no demands for him to resign by Republicans because a Democratic governor would appoint a successor.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's what you're doing on the toilet seat. And I think what happened and the reason it came out the way it did is it looked for a while to outside people who weren't following it. Well, it was disorderly conduct. Maybe he got crocked. Maybe he was drunk. Maybe he was sitting there. And he probably thought very naively it could slide by.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably, you know, I'm a non-practicing attorney, but I don't think you need to be Perry Mason. This would have been a fairly weak case.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and he acknowledged in the news conference where he told us three or four times that he is not and never has been gay, that he pled guilty hoping this would just go away.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what happened. And I think had he not spent the last 25 or 30 years demonizing people who were different than him, he wouldn't have had to cop a plea. It probably would have gone away. And the original sin, if you will, is that he was part of a culture on the right wing of alleged Christian conservatives who don't seem to know what the Sermon on the Mount was all about, who make a practice of turning hatred towards people they don't agree with or who are different.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what set the trap for himself.
Yeah,
that's my take on the thing. I mean, he's a goner politically. I have no sympathy for him because, frankly, he's a nasty guy, to
yeah.
those of us who know him.
Yeah,
I'm not all that outraged or offended by, I mean, it reminded me when you listen to this of Rosemary Woods on the Nixon tapes when she had this bizarre picture of herself,
mm-hmm.
Erasing the tapes, and how could anybody be that contorted? I mean, we're sitting here saying, well, if his left leg was 12 inches from his right leg sitting on the toilet and his right hand reached under the stall, I mean, it's ridiculous and preposterous, okay? The original sin is these guys sit around and not only are hypocritical and phony, but they try to turn hatred for political advantage against people they don't agree with. They've done it to gays. They've done it to Democratic war heroes. At times, they've done it in the ugly campaign against Harold Ford with a racist ad in the Tennessee Senate race. And those guys are all getting hired by the Republican presidential candidates.
Yeah.
So they get eaten by their own cancer,
mm-hmm.
is what I think happened. That's what happened to David Vitter. There will be others. And it seems to be a disease that the Republican Party has. And I've never seen a party morally implode the way they are.
Yeah, it is amazing. Brent Podalski's with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can join us if you have a comment at 888-5-PETER-B. And if you go to the pundit blog at thehill.com, you can see the exchange between Karen Hanratty and Brent Podalski. And here's what offended Brent, written by Karen Hanratty. And it reads, when Brent Podalski managed to, I just changed her name by the way, I flipped the vowels. It's Hanratty, not Hanratty.
Right,
sorry.
Hanratty. Right.
When Brent Podalski managed to weave the arrest of Idaho Senator Larry Craig into yet another diatribe about war in Iraq in his post yesterday, I just rolled my eyes and laughed to myself. Leave it to Podalski to link bathroom sex in Iraq. He keeps good company with June Thomas, an editor at Slate, who complained law enforcement should concern itself with finding Osama bin Laden, not men looking to kill time in the men's room. So then you fired off a lengthy response to Hanratty today. Tell us about that.
Well, basically, what I said was, she lied. Something I think Democrats need to do a lot more often. The gist of it is she, well, here's, let me give you the backdrop, because this is really important. Not about me, I'm not important. The voice that I am giving voice to are the generals in the Marine Corps and the Army and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'm downtown Washington.
Yeah, it's warm, and you got to have the windows open.
No, the windows are closed.
Oh.
This is loud. But I am giving voice when I say, with John Warner, that we ought to be withdrawing troops from Iraq before Christmas. And when I say with General Peter Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that we should be withdrawing at least half of our troops in the course of next year, I am voicing an opinion that the overwhelming majority of American generals, American admirals, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the CIA privately believe. David Petraeus is not. And there have been all kinds of misrepresentations made about what the surge has achieved. My view is it's very little. The most important point is that the generals themselves, to a large degree, agree with what I am saying, do not agree with what Bush, Cheney, and David Petraeus are saying. And they have decided, from their point of view, to draw a line. And to repeat, because it's important, John Warner, the senator from Virginia, the Republican, who tends to speak often for the Joint Chiefs, wants to withdraw some troops, 5,000 or so, by Christmas. And Peter Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, leaked that he wants to withdraw about half of the troops in next year.
Well, and let me just amend that, because what Pace leaked was that we must bring home half the troops next year because they're overextended, and even with the 15-month tour, we are maxed out and we are underprepared for any other challenge that might surface on another front.
Right, exactly. So that's what they are saying. They are representing the majority view by far, probably 80 to 90%. Of American generals around the world, contrary to what Bush and Petraeus are saying, okay? I represent in Washington, and I have more than 20 years of a reputation here, I am giving an honest voice to what the Marine Corps and the Army and General Pace and Senator Warner and those people basically think. The tactic that is now being used against me, and it won't work, this is actually helping me, don't worry, is to say, well, I'm a, what Karen called an uber lefty.
Yeah.
Is her word. and oh, she rolled her eyes and she looked how silly, how uncredible. And what I wrote back was, I did what people in Washington don't do as much as they should, which is to tell the truth. And I said, you lied.
And let me read a couple of lifts here. When Ms. Hanready calls me an uber lefty, she's lying. She knows she's lying, which is the hallmark of someone who knows she has lost the debate and resorts to the same discredited tactics that have done so much damage to our troops in Iraq, our moral credibility in the world, and the Republican Party's collapsing moral standing and collapsing reputation among Americans.
Right, and I did a whole litany at the end. And I would encourage people to read it, especially if you're going to be talking or writing to people in Congress, because I did a whole litany at the end of maybe the Hanratties of the world and the people at Fox could join me and the military people in supporting wounded troops, in supporting homeless veterans, in supporting reasonable treatment for disabled veterans who are getting screwed, in supporting an end to the cruel and abusive troop rotations that are necessary to keep this, in supporting an end to the lack of treatment of veteran centers and the lack of health care for veterans, and to support with us, with the troops, with the vets, with the generals, join us, Karen Hanready, and join us, Fox News, to supporting the $500 billion of 20- to 30-year long-term needs for vets, worse than what happened in Vietnam, and those vets aren't being treated well, to support us in joining the dignity and honor and health care and emergency financial aid over the long term to troops, vets, and military families. What I'm saying is, you ain't going to call me, kiddo, a crazy left-wing blogger. I'm the voice of the Marine Corps, the veterans, and the troops, and you are not. And when you say anything else, you are lying. That's what Democrats ought to be doing a lot more. And if Kerry did it in 2004, he'd be president right now.
Absolutely. And the only thing you left out of your litany there was calling for the closure of Guantanamo.
Oh, absolutely. And I also added that we ought to show the honor, as General Antonio Taguba said, of ending the Abu Ghraib cover-up and supporting the Geneva Convention and ending torture, which every commander of every service and every branch of the military believes. And when Bush and Cheney say the opposite, Bush and Cheney are lying. It is a sacred trust of the military. They all believe this, to uphold the Geneva Convention.
Mm-hmm.
Abu Ghraib is a sin, and we can't even convict and have not convicted one single officer of one count on Abu Ghraib, according not only to me, but according to General Antonio Taguba, who publicly said this, that there's a cover-up and that there's political pressures. And the truth is, this probably goes into Rumsfeld's office, Alberto Gonzalez's office, Dick Cheney's office, and George Bush's office, and probably their desk. And we should not let that issue go until justice is done. And that's what the military believes. They believe that we should close Guantanamo and support the Geneva Convention, and that from George Washington till today, our country does not torture people.
We're going to take a break and return with Brent Podolsky. You got a comment? Bring it on now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Visit our website at peterbcollins.com to drop me an email. Listen to archive program. And coming next week, new and improved podcasts at peterbcollins.com.
A radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Listen as we deal with life-changing issues that affect all of us. Our fears, passions, anger, addictions, the law of attraction, and how we change ourselves so we can live an extraordinary life. Join me, Sheila Gale, along with Ava, as we share tools for change that work. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Life 105. Saturdays, 4 to 5. Brought to you by Sun Street Centers with education, prevention, and treatment for alcohol and drug addiction.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
President Bush says he listens to his military commanders. Well, Mr. President, I was one of those commanders, and you weren't listening when we warned you of the dangers we'd face invading Iraq. Now our military is overcommitted, and America is less secure. Mr. President, you're being told we need serious diplomacy, not escalation, and you're still not listening. If the President won't listen, Congress must.
And there we go. Let's take a look at the latest. Starting off with a problem. Let's see. CHP telling us about a situation working in Hollister, Fairview Road, Fallon. Disabled truck. It was a truck towing a trailer. Still stuck in the lanes. Morgan Hill, southbound 101 at Cochran. Three-vehicle crash. Still may be in the middle lanes there, but it looks like they're going to try to push that off. In fact, they still are in the middle lanes. Prunedale 156 at Meridian. We have a stall in the right lane working there. Also want to take a look at Salinas, Highway 68 at Foster Road. We have a stall there partially blocking the roadway, and we're going to tell you about that particular situation. Also want to tell you about San Juan Batista, Highway 101 southbound before 129. We do have another truck stalled out there, and Highway 1 in Castroville southbound at 183, animals in the roadway.
And we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes in front of the hour. You pick the hour, okay? We continue with Brent Podolsky. I want you to go to the website www.pundits.thehill.com and click on the picture of Brent Podolsky, and you can see the thread here that we're talking about. And, Brent, I wholly agree with you that Democrats really need to call lies what they are, lies, not, it's an evasion or it's not accurate or something like that. When somebody flat-out lies, you got to say so. And I want to get your take on this. Last Sunday, at some personal peril,
I flipped on the Fox News Channel while I was fixing dinner and watched Sean Hannity's weekend program when he's unburdened by the balance that Alan Colmes allegedly provides. And he went right for the jugular in two packages. One, smearing John Edwards over his Two Americas campaign and his populist approach to trying to draw attention and build new policies related to working Americans and the poor. And they dinged him because that hedge fund that he was working with and invested in owned some mortgage companies that evicted some people along the Gulf Coast and in New Orleans. Then they turned to a very heavily produced package smearing Hillary Clinton. Unfortunately, the Clinton smear was based on facts and was devastating. They even had a pair of beach sandals there, and they conferred upon her the John Kerry flip-flop title. And they ran a series of clips showing her various positions on the war in Iraq, starting with the speech that she gave in October of 2002 before she voted to authorize the president's policy, and then showing how she supported, and then as she started to emerge as a presidential candidate, she started to oppose the war and offer various positions. Then they closed with her recent speech to the VFW, where she said that the policy is working, the surge policy she was referring to, at least in Al-Anbar, but that this is something we should have done 4 years ago. And what I want to point out, Brent, is that I consider her to be very vulnerable to the Republican attack machine. And for that reason and a few others, I am not willing to support Senator Clinton for president at this time. If she becomes the nominee, you can bet that I'll be able to suck it up and vote for her. But she's not my first choice, and it's largely because of her negatives in the polls and what Sean Hannity just previewed for us, the prospect of attacks on her current record, as well as all the stuff from the Clinton era in the 1990s.
Oh, yeah. Here's my take. Number one, I will support her completely if she is the nominee. She is not my first or my second choice for similar reasons to yours, but also for a bigger reason that gets into the whole problem with the media. I would say that Howard Dean in 2004, Al Gore, and to a degree Barack Obama, are the first 21st century politicians or political leaders. Hillary is one of the better breed of the old century, playing by the old rules. What you see throughout the new media is some of us are challenging the status quo. I come with one foot in the establishment and one foot anti the establishment, but that view is not allowed on cable, okay?
Right.
When you look on Fox, what you get is you get a host who's a right-wing smear artist, a topic, are Democrats soft on terrorism, yes or no? Then you'll get a Republican hatchet person like Karen Hanretti, who's one of them, okay, who will then lie about Democrats. And they find the most pathetic collection of Potemkin Democrats who kind of say, well, we're not that bad.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my take is you're lying. And that's why I'm not on, and they find these people who I don't even know who half their alleged clients are, cause who the so-called Democratic strategists.
Yeah.
Hillary is being pushed on all of these. But you watch Chris Matthews, who almost has a psychosexual fetish about Hillary. I mean, if there was an asteroid coming to Earth, Peter, and life on Earth was going to be destroyed in 24 hours, Chris would do a segment. Well, how does this affect Hillary?
Well, the other side of Chris that I'm waiting to see the shoe drop is that he appears to have a great infatuation with Rudy Giuliani, and I don't know if they've ever, you know, shared bathroom stalls.
No. No, I mean, but see, that's the old establishment way of thinking. And again, I'll support Hillary if she's nominated, for sure. But I would like to see some new thinking, and that's why it was not only that Hillary supported the war, but she attacked Obama when Obama was advocating things that we all should, like no first nuclear attack on Iran.
Right.
That ought to be non-controversial. That ought to be something that we stand for. And so you have the media will turn on Hillary. Chris Matthews will turn on Hillary the way he turned on Al Gore, okay, the way they turned on John Kerry, okay, as soon as she's nominated, if she is. All right. Be that as it may, what we need is the kind of debate that we're not getting. We don't need a topic. CNBC did a topic yesterday. I didn't see the show, but I saw the promo.
Mm-hmm.
Do Democrats want a recession? Now, I know Mark Hoffman, the president of the company, and of CNBC, and I'm going to send him an email shortly. Go, you have got to be joking. How about do Republicans foreclose Americans because they get ripped off on loans before they bail out the banks?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what kind of argument is it? Do Democrats favor a recession? The kind of view that I'm articulating, and the interesting thing is people write comments under the post on the Hill site. It will be read by a lot of high-level people in politics and in media, because what I did is what's not done. I broke the rules. I called a liar a liar. I said what Democrats should say and what is not allowed to be said on Fox and is almost never allowed even on MSNBC. I didn't play the good guy. Well, we're all pretty bad. I'm not really an uber lefty.
Yeah.
I said I've been advocating and supporting our military and our troops, most of whom oppose this war for more than 20 years. Any statement to the contrary about me or them is a lie. That's what Democrats should be doing. When Jack Murtha did this on the floor, when they called him a coward, you could see him run for cover off the floor of the House, because mm-hmm. you don't mess with that Marine Jack Murtha.
That's right.
One of the better voices against this policy.
Brent, I got to run. Thank you for standing up and calling a lie a lie.
My pleasure.
We'll talk again soon. That's Brent Badowski in Washington. Go to thehill.com and click on the Pundit's blog to read all about it. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B. Collins. Have a great Labor Day holiday weekend.
Keep smiling until then.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Admission and denial in the audio tape of the arrest of Senator Larry Craig in an airport men's room. CBS News correspondent Wyatt Andrews.
With the tape rolling and his Miranda rights understood, U.S. Senator Larry Craig, who had just been charged with lewd conduct in an airport bathroom, blames everything on the arresting officer.
You're out to enforce the law,
right?
But you shouldn't be out to entrap people either.
This is an entrapment.
All right.
The officer, Airport Police Sergeant Dave Karsnia, assures the senator he'll likely avoid jail if he cooperates. Craig then admits he bumped the officer's foot under the bathroom stall, but denies that was a signal for sex.
White House spokesman Tony Snow weighing in on the issue, barely.
It's something that the Senate Ethics Committee is going to be handling.
More than 4 months after Sung-hui Cho killed 32 people on the campus of Virginia Tech, a report comes out.
The report faults university officials for failing to identify Cho 2 years ago as an emerging danger. Professors complained of his violent writings. Female students accused him of stalking. And his roommates reported suicide threats. But the information was not widely shared. The totality of the reports would have and should have raised alarms.
CBS News correspondent Bob Orr there on the upside.
The report does credit police and emergency workers with a quick response to the shootings at Norris Hall, where 31 people died. Cho was found among them with 203 unspent bullets, leading investigators to conclude, as bad as this was, it could have been much worse.
The mood outside a Huntington, Utah mine, as dark as it is deep down inside it.
We haven't given up, but we're running out of possibilities.
Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration spokesman Rich Kolcheski, after crews finished drilling a seventh unproductive hole into the mountain where six miners have been trapped for 25 days. General Accounting Office giving a big thumbs down to progress in Iraq. At the White House?
The White House is doing all it can to downplay the GAO's dismal report.
It would be a mistake to limit one's view of what goes on in Iraq to the benchmarks.
Spokesman Tony Snow and other officials say the Congressional Watchdog Agency's assessment is unrealistic because it tags pass or fail grades to the benchmarks without considering what the White House views as progress. The administration will issue its own report in about 2 weeks, a report that will contend the troop surge is working. Peter Mayer, CBS.